Everyone, this is Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode 53, and we are here tonight discussing episode 18 of season 3, Teen Wolf, Riddled. Now, this was a pretty special episode, and we have a pretty special guest to help discuss it with us this week. As usual, you can always reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast, our Gmail, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com. or our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. Or you can go over to Hyperbole and leave comments on the post of this actual podcast there. So Karen and I, hi Karen.
Hi.
Are joined by Robbie this week. Now Robbie is a pretty major player in the Teen Wolf fandom and has been for a long time. I'm sure all of you have seen his Twitter or Tumblr or YouTube, which is all wonderrobbie.tumblr.twitter.youtube, whatever URL. He's been a long time pal of ours at the podcast, and he likes to call himself a part-time author and part-time pop culture fangirl. So, hi, Robbie, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
I was going to say, I'm great. I'm not great,
no.
Robbie. I'm
gonna
be
no,
straight.
You're not.
I'm not great right now. I love how that's like the automatic response. That's not the truth at all. I'm traumatized and I don't want to do this episode. So how are you, Robbie?
Pretty much the same. Yeah. Pretty much the same, but I'm very excited to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And I thank you both very much for having me.
You are welcome. It's about time that we got you on. So hopefully, hopefully it shall be a nice experience, even if it's horrible. Basically, this episode, Riddled, it's a bit of an odd one because it's not, I don't think anyone was particularly even shocked by the outcome of it. It's not like there was like a big reveal like of something that we didn't already kind of know was coming, but it seems to have been a game changer for a lot of people in terms of their emotional response to the episode, or just, you know, some aspect of it seems to have just hit everyone very differently. And so we're not really tackling this episode like we usually would with funny quotes and stuff like that. We sort of wanted to start off with, how this kind of made people feel, how this left people afterwards, the fandom in general, and your own personal sort of take on it as well, because I've sort of never we've had some rough episodes in this and in other fandoms, but I've never really seen a response like this to an episode, especially of Teen Wolf. So, I mean, did you guys find this very different to how you'd usually react to kind of an upsetting episode of TV?
Yeah, it was it was really hard. It hurt a lot, which is funny because, God, it's just a television show. Like, get over it. I mean, I know we're all in the fandom and we all get really obsessed with things, but this hit so hard. And, I mean, between, like, leading up to the episode, I was distracted all day and I was like, oh, my God, dreading it, but really excited because I wanted to know what was going to happen next and see everything that we knew was going to happen in this episode. And I saw the episode and it was just so intense and affected me so significantly. And it's, you know, one of the reasons why we're not doing the quotes this time around is because, well, for one, I at least don't have a favorite quote. There isn't really a quote that stuck out to me in this episode because all of the significant parts were so nonverbal. Mm. All of my favorite parts, nobody was talking. It was just emotions. It was just brilliant acting. And I don't really, you know, the dialogue, which is usually so perfect and spot on in Teen Wolf, just was completely blown out of the water by everybody's performances, their nonverbal performances. And it was just, yeah, I agree that it was a really different kind of episode, and it just went to a place that I think I was anticipating, but still wasn't really ready for.
Yeah, I mean, what you said about nonverbal is pretty significant in terms of, like, I mean, obviously, you know, we all, you know, everyone listening to this episode has watched the episode of Teen Wolf. It's not like, you know, we are going to go through in a moment and talk about the points and, you know, the plot. But so much of this seemed to sort of hinge on the characters themselves not being able to adequately express things in words, whether that's like the sheriff or Scott or whatever. Like, it wasn't a matter of like, oh, you know, the dialogue was subpar, like, you know, because it wasn't in the times that there was dialogue, and there was a lot of really beautiful stuff, like I think with Scott and Derek especially, but so much of it was just people being lost, and that, I don't know, that was just it was really different, and it's like you said, it wasn't shocking. It wasn't like a huge reveal. It wasn't like, you know, a major death. It wasn't like outright trauma and sobbing and stuff like that. It was just different in some way that I can't put my finger on, but it's very distressing. But Robbie, how did you take it?
No, I completely agree. The thing I do have to say about this, and I read it not only on Tumblr but on Twitter, is that the acting was absolutely superb in this episode, particularly Dylan O'Brien, of course, but just everybody, just like you were saying, the, not so much the words, but the emotions, the way the sheriff was just, you know, you see how upset he was as a father, and then how he had to turn it off to be, all right, a now cop, I'm a cop.
Yeah.
I gotta find my son on top of everything else. I'm not even going to go into the hug, because I'm sure we're going to go into that. And yeah, but it's just, it was such a brilliant, it has to be one of my favorite episodes of the entire series, I do have to say. And yes, there really wasn't a reveal so much, maybe kind of towards the end, there was a little, oh, okay. Mm. But there are no words. You know, I've watched it twice, as I'm sure both of you have, and it does not get easier watching it, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and it doesn't.
Yeah, no.
I mean, after I watched it the first time, and I tweeted this, if people follow me on Twitter and follow our account, I actually tweeted this to, I was talking to Donya, but she was running our Twitter and I was on my own, but I said, like, and I'm pretty much just reading this out loud, but I was like, I don't think an episode of TV has ever left me feeling so real life upset. Like, exactly. I actually didn't cry in the episode the first time. I did on the second watch, I think, during the hug, but I didn't cry on the first watch. And I've been extremely upset and affected by TV in, like, many ways. Like, in, like, lying there sobbing for hours afterward when it's just, like, a general character death, or I've been angry or scared or sad, or even like I do Glee Chat and we had to have that Corey Monteith like Finn tribute episode, which was awful and tragic because it was, you know, really about him. But this one, all of those emotions were always some way contained in terms of being about the show. Like, it wasn't something that could like harm me or touch my actual mental state or like kind of affect the rest of my day. Like, it was like, well, I know that's TV. Even if I'm like sad, it's like a cathartic kind of like a good sad or whatever. It's not like, you know, it comes from caring about fiction. It comes from whatever. And it's not like I feel genuinely troubled. This left me unsettled, like something wrong had happened to me in real life. Like, I'd heard that someone I knew, like something was wrong with them, or that I just had a fight with someone or something. It left me feeling really affected in a way that was not good, like not like oh, I'm impressed with television. It was like it felt bad, like I hated watching it, like not that it wasn't stunning quality, not like, oh, it was such a bad episode, but like it was a negative experience. Like, I mean, you know, the show is stronger for it, but it was a negative experience for me.
I think, you know, the fact too that there really were no fights. There was not a lot of action sequences, except for the electric at the end.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what it kind of reminded me of, and I may get hurt by saying this, it kind of reminded me of the body episode from Buffy.
When it was just,
all right, this is what's going on. There is a bad guy, but the fact is that the emotions and the characters, you're feeling every thing all at once, and then we watch it again, and then feel it all again, and that's really what it kind of reminded me of, that the characters really just dug right into your soul, and it hurt a lot.
Yeah, it was just, I don't know, man, it was just, it was kind of like the first, say, 10 minutes maybe, I was kind of like rolling along, like, yeah, this is really good quality, but like, oh my god, Styles, I was prepared sort of for it to be like an action thing. It was when, basically, I think it had a pretty strong turning point when the Nogitsune sort of started talking to him about the riddles, and then sort of again when you kind of realized that he wasn't, that it was all in his head, that he wasn't really experiencing those things, and it made it worse. But all of it as well, because it was all in his head, I sort of said this to the girls when we were sort of discussing how much we didn't want to do this and exist in the world and how we want to retire from public life and just cry. But it's kind of almost like it wasn't even an episode of like a supernatural show. It felt like the entire thing was just a metaphor for like mental health, for someone like battling for mental health with, you know, and I don't know, it was just, I can't describe it. It's so strange because it's not even the most dramatic thing that's ever happened on the show. I mean, it's horrible, but it's not even the most dramatic thing that happened on the show. Like, you know, you have things like Motel California, which was, you know, also completely awful. And I also read recently that apparently Jeff, I remember when we reviewed Motel California and I was saying, I think that Scott was already, because he'd lit that spark thing, I think he was already back in himself and still suicidal. Apparently that's the thing Jeff has actually said but never followed up on. So I'm actually very curious about that. That's just a random aside. But that was very horrible. But again, it's like what I mentioned, like it was kind of within the context of the show. It could affect you very deeply within the context of watching Teen Wolf. And maybe for some people it left some echoes, you know, for personal reasons. But, you know, in general, it's just a really good, really upsetting episode of television. This one, literally everyone I've spoken to or seen seems to have been really shaken by more than just watching an episode of television. And I don't know what it is. I can't pin it down. I don't know if it was just too real, like the emotions too real, or if it's because it's Styles and people are so attached to him and attached to Dylan in a way that I've not seen people latch onto a character to in years and years and years. But I don't know. I mean, Karen, do you have any sort of idea why this is happening?
I mean, it's so difficult, and I think part of it for me is, and of course I'm just hurting myself by doing this, but like I've been going back and looking at GIFs and stuff of, you know, season one of our characters, especially of Styles, and he's so different. I mean, it is just completely different, and it's really hard to kind of put those two together. You know what I mean? Because it's such a huge change. And I was looking specifically at what Dylan was doing, and I was trying to figure out like why he is so good at this and why you can just see that change so clearly on his face. And I think it's because Styles was always the type of person to flail around, and all of his movements were really big. And now we have this like dark Styles, and he's not like, he doesn't really move, and all of his movements and his facial expressions are really subtle. And it just brings that character to life. And I think if it had been anyone but Styles, people wouldn't be so upset because we're all so connected to him. And yeah. I can't mm-hmm. really explain it either, but all I can say is that I completely understand about it affecting you in a way that is really, really realistic and really hard to take. I mean, like, I have anxiety, and I can feel my anxiety like peaking when I think about it because it's just, it's that real, and it's so hard to take.
Yeah, I felt like wrong. Like, I felt like when I have had, a not great mental health day myself. Like, I don't know if it's like because it's Styles that, you know, and it's, you know, there's a lot of, in the fandom, I'm just, like, waving my hands around, like, oh, I can't sweat, about, like, you know, there's all these people that super love Styles, and then there's all these people that kind of resent Styles for being the favourite, you know, and because their favourite is someone else and whatever. Like, I just don't care. Like, I can't deal with it, but so I don't want to say that it's, like, oh, it's because it's Styles because everyone loves him more, but I think it's, like, more like what you said, like, it's not about whether Styles is your favourite character or not, it's that Dylan's acting is different to other people's. His acting style is different to other people's. If you'd been watching that happen to another character, it would have maybe not taken you out of it so much. It maybe would have been more like just watching a character on TV. But Dylan has something, and I mean, it's probably the reason why Styles is a lot of people's favourite character, and maybe there are, you know, people who believe this about other characters, but Dylan has a quality in his acting, and he has it in every role he's done. It's not just Styles. I've seen pretty much everything he's done. That is, he is that character. It's not watching someone play a character. And you can say that about so many, you know, that kind of thing gets tossed around so much about people. I have never seen anyone like him who is absolutely, that person exists. The character he's playing exists, if you know exactly. what I mean. Like, it is not a person playing a role. Nothing is stilted. Nothing. It is like, so watching him and his family go through that is like watching a documentary. It's not like watching a character. And I don't know how he does it. He is literally born to do what he does. There are people who act because they want to and because they're good at it. He could not do anything else. He brings things to life in a way that is so real, that is so complex. And mm-hmm. I don't know how to say this without sounding like I'm shit-talking the other actors, because it's not like the bar isn't very high to start with, but he has something. And I think everyone who works with him knows it. Like, I think everyone else says it as well. He has something that people don't usually have. I remember listening to a podcast with him a couple of years ago. He came on Kevin Smith's podcast. He was only about 19 at the time. It was only a few episodes into season one, like halfway through season one. It was actually at the Comic-Con that I attended, and I wasn't even watching Teen Wolf yet. But he was so taken aback by Kevin Smith. Basically, apparently his daughter had flicked on the show and was watching it, and Kevin Smith came into the room and, like, saw two scenes with this kid and was like, that kid is the best actor of this generation. Like, he, you know, film star, movie director, you know, has done so many different genres, worked with, like, Oscar-winning actors, like, you know, worked, you know, consistently with, like, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, who, like, you know, won a bunch of Oscars and were also, like, young prodigies. But, like, he was just, like, that kid, he's the one. Like, just straight away, he saw him on screen and he knew. Like, he has something different. And he brought Dylan on the show and basically just his wife, Kevin Smith's wife, it was actually, like, you need to calm down, you're scaring him, like, on the podcast, because he was sitting there just lavishing, like, you are so good, you are just, you're gonna be the one, like, and it was just, he's just has it, like, he just has something that people don't always have, and it's, you know, as I said, it's impossible to say that without sounding like you're talking down about every other actor, but it's just, it's unique, and I just, yeah, it was like watching, it wasn't like watching a character you cared about, like, go through that. It was like watching a person that you know, like, through a glass panel, you know, in their mind or whatever. Like, it was like watching a documentary or a, you know, video of someone that you know.
Yeah,
I don't exactly. know. I'm just no, talking no, no. crap.
No, you're not. No, it makes total sense because for my whole entire thing. I'm sorry, Karen, did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
Oh okay. No, because my whole entire thing is that, I mean, it was towards the end of 3A, is that you go all the way back. This was just supposed to be the sidekick, comic relief, like the kid, the skinny kid that, like, you know, hangs from his friend's roof and, you know, does all this, you know, sneaks into his bedroom at night. And he was just supposed to be that one kid that, like, the sarcastic, fun side. And now it's like, whoa, what just happened? And why are they not throwing Emmys at this kid?
Yeah, he's going to win an Oscar. Like, and this is the thing, I heard people talking, like, just drama, Teen Wolf drama, being like, oh, you know, Dylan O'Brien does, you know, he should leave Teen Wolf, blah, blah. He, you know, he should, you know, Geoff Davis doesn't respect him enough or whatever. I'm like, number one, that's really not true. But number two, wanted to leave Teen Wolf, he could walk out of there and everyone would be after him, if you know what I mean. He has... Mm-hmm. everything at his feet right now. People know exactly how good he is. And if he wanted to leave Teen Wolf, he could walk off Teen Wolf and start, like, he will be the male Jennifer Lawrence. Like, watch. Like, he will be, like, you know, the, you know, all different franchises, you know, drama, comedy, you know, sci-fi, whatever. And she's, you know, got your teen, you know, fantasy franchise. And then, on the other hand, you could go do an indie movie and get nominated for, like, Oscars 3 years in a row. Like, he will win awards, and he could walk out of there and get whatever he wants. And so he's on Teen Wolf because he wants to be on Teen Wolf, guys. It's okay. Like, don't worry about Dylan O'Brien. Like, it's okay.
He's going to be fine.
He'll be fine. Yeah, no, but please don't leave anytime soon, though. Let's just put that out in the cosmos, please. Please don't leave anytime soon.
But, yeah, it's... Oh, I just... I don't know. I've never seen anyone like him, ever. Like, I say, male Jennifer Lawrence. I still watch Jennifer Lawrence in movies and see Jennifer Lawrence doing movies, if you know what I mean. Like... I just meant that more of a kind of genre thing. Like, I have never seen anyone who acts the way that he acts. I don't...
That GIF set that's on Tumblr, I linked to it on my Twitter, where you see, you know, him as himself laying in the MRI machine, and then him as, you know, kind of taken over with the Nogitsune. Side by side, the things that he does with just his eyes and his movements... I'm extremely creeped out, but at the same time, I'm just floored by how amazing it is for something so subtle. And if you really want to understand why people love him and why people love this show, I mean, everyone listening to this obviously already loves Teen Wolf, but if you're trying to convince anybody else, show them that gift set because it's incredible. And, you know, I kind of, on Twitter, I was like, our funny sidekick is better than your funny sidekick because not everybody's, you know, comedy chops are as good as their drama chops, and his is.
Yeah, I mean, there was actually an article a few days, this article on the Daily Dot, and it was basically a huge review of how he sort of has come to this massive, you know, fame in I guess the generation of Tumblr and whatever, and how most people, I guess, who aren't a part of that would kind of look at that and assume it was, you know, kids liking another cute boy and, you know, out of some show. But it's basically going through about, you know, all his acting props and how, you know, everyone on Teen Wolf is attractive. But this is like a huge game changer, and basically talking about the fact that people, you know, of our generation or of even the generation beneath us, or, like, you know, people in fandom, that their taste is guided by quality, if you know what I mean. That, you know, maybe the parents or the adults or the, you know, the old media think that people go manic about the stuff that is hot and gorgeous or whatever, but that it is actually people going manic because of how much people in fandom have come to kind of cherish and seek out quality and things being the best they can possibly be. And I think that's quite indicative of his acting, obviously. And I'll link this article later, but it's just, I don't know, man. Yeah, he's something. He's something special.
He's something to reckon with.
Yeah, he's something special for sure. And I guess that, yeah, it's, I mean, a quote here. I mean, as we said, we don't want him to leave Teen Wolf ever. Mm-hmm. But it says, just let me read this out loud. You know when you discover the existence of some weird role an A-list star took on before they were famous? As in, did Jennifer Aniston really star in a horror movie called Leprechaun? Did Elijah Wood seriously make a National Dairy Board PSA on the health-giving properties of cheese? What exactly led George Clooney to end up credited as lip-syncing transvestite in a 1992 movie about organ harvesting? For Dylan O'Brien, Teen Wolf stars Stilinski is that role. Now, we're not for a moment saying that Teen Wolf's embarrassing. There's a reason it's gained such a cult following over the past couple of years. It's entertaining, it's unusually good at representing LGBT characters, and by all accounts, it's cut above most similar teen shows on TV right now. It's not quite the same level as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but then again, what is? Either way, in the context of Dylan O'Brien's career, it's a different story entirely. In 10 years' time, people are less likely to be saying, Dylan O'Brien, former star of Teen Wolf, and more likely to be asking, can you believe that Dylan O'Brien seriously used to star in a show called Teen Wolf? And I think that, you know, I mean, as they say, not that they're cutting down Teen Wolf, but that is true. He's going to go so far, if he chooses to, of course, because he may not choose to. He may choose to do something else or go into directing or writing or whatever. But if he chooses to, he's going to be the A-list of A-list, if you know what I mean. He is, what, 22 now? He was 19 when he got the role. He'd never had a professional role, ever. And this is what he's doing. Like, this is what he can do from just... And the fact that they took him just on... That they could see that? Like, you don't give someone like that a role with no...
Especially considering that his resume, they always say, consisted of, like, 2 YouTube links.
Yeah. Like, you don't give someone a role like that unless they show something incredible. Like, you don't give someone inexperienced that role unless they show something incredible, both, you know, in the screen test and in the way they come across. Like, because they could be just some, like, crazy kid who, like, gets on set and, like, runs around, like, like, you know, like, yeah, you don't do that. Like, you don't cast people like that, you know, who haven't even got, you know, any, you know, commercials, like, experience being on a professional set, like, nothing, like... Like, you don't do that unless...
You don't do that, especially if you're lip-syncing to Spice Girls and now all of a sudden...
Yeah, like, you just don't do that unless they show something absolutely irreplaceable. And he clearly did. So, good God, thank God they cast him. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, we've been doing this for half an hour.
Yeah, so. Should probably stop waxing poetic about Dylan O'Brien and actually discuss it.
I can't meet him. I don't know how you have. Like,
It was really difficult.
I probably could, because I think that when he's himself, he very much is himself as well. I don't know, but I just... There's a lot of actors that I really... And celebrities that I really love. You know, I like them on a personal level. I know what they're like, and I could hold a conversation with them and that would actually not be totally weird, and that they might, you know... enjoy as a human-to-human interaction. I genuinely have no idea how I would interact with Dylan O'Brien. And I am starstruck by him, and there's not very many people that I'm like that about. Like, really not. Like, I am friends with people who are more famous than him. Like, and I just can't. I don't know what to... Yeah. Anyway, I just... oh, good times. Let's go into the actual show, shall we? Because an episode
isn't
fun, funnily enough.
Let's do this. It's going to be painful, so we should just jump right in. And actually, that's kind of one of the first things that I wanted to bring up, was that the beginning of this episode, Scott gets a call from Stiles saying that he doesn't know where he is. We basically jump right into the horror that is this episode. And I don't know about you guys, but I kind of wasn't expecting that. It literally started within 10 seconds of the episode beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much we kind of knew in advance was going to happen, whether it would be like a cold open or anything like that. But it did all move very quickly. Like, even, you know, later on when he's found, you're almost kind of expecting him being found to be the entire plot, if you know what I mean, at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
But then it was only like halfway through, and then there was all this other. So yeah, I guess they didn't have time to dilly-dally around.
No. It's funny you say that, because I remember looking at the clock, yeah, and it was like half past, and I was like, wait, oh they God. Found him already?
The
like,
end? Yeah.
What's the rest of the episode going to be like?
No, it was like when they did the last commercial break, when it was like 10:50 or whatever it was, and I was like, oh, I know something's going to happen. Mm. I know there's still more to this, and they're going to squeeze whatever they can and hurt us even more.
And they did. The next scene was actually the only one that I really found funny, and I think it's because it was right in the beginning of the episode, but it was when Aiden and Lydia were together in the art room. Mm-hmm. And I know that people, you know, don't like the twins, especially Aiden, but I actually really liked this episode, or like this scene of them together. I thought it was funny, and it doesn't hurt when, you know, one of the guys strips down to his underwear. Oh, just gonna throw cool. that out there.
I was a bit surprised they were like back together. Like, is that like a thing that, like, because the last we saw of them really talking, I guess, was her being like standing up to him and being like, you're one of the bad guys and I don't want to be the bad guys. And I know that they've tried to kind of prove themselves and be a part of Scott's group, and they were at Scott's house in the last episode when the agent got stabbed and stuff. So have they proved themselves enough for Lydia to be like, okay, you're okay now? Or is it kind of she can't stay away from him? Like, how much does she really like him? But that being said, I mean, we only saw Aiden this episode, even not Ethan, who's usually a bit nicer. Aiden felt more genuine in his help and kind of involvement than he has before. Like, it felt changed to me a bit.
Yeah, I don't think that Lydia is back with Aiden. I think, you know, she's a girl in high school and he's a super hot werewolf. I can kind of see why she would have a little bit of trouble staying away from him. But at the same time, I think she realizes that, like, he still is one of the bad guys. And yeah, he's trying to prove himself, but he hasn't yet. So I think there's always going to be that line there until he really does step over it and prove himself. But I think that while she likes teasing him and she doesn't mind it when he pulls his shirt off, she's not really there for that anymore. I think she did state that quite clearly in a previous episode.
And I think she kind of, I don't want to say trusts him, but realizes that, hey, I can be alone in a school with him, mm-hmm, and not have to worry about him ripping my throat out or something. You know, whether or not he's trying to prove that he's not that guy anymore, or the fact that she is a teenage girl who's a little bit hormonal and sees a guy with no shirt on and doesn't mind it at all. You know, I mean, it could be that as well. But I think that she knows, see, Lydia's the one in charge of that relationship, I guess we can call it.
Mm.
You
yeah.
know, she's the one like, no, no. And then yes, but no. You know, she holds the reins, mm, and she knows how to, you know, stop everything,
yeah,
in case of anything.
Yeah.
Which she pretty much does when she hears the voices starting to come out of the radio. Everything kind of stops. I mean, dead halt. And we hear Styles. And I definitely have some thoughts on this, but it comes later in the episode, so I'll save them for that. But I thought it was, you know, like I said last time, they do such a good job of putting a really funny scene right next to something that's either really creepy or really heart-wrenching, and they do it so well.
Yes.
Now or you mean, just sighs.
Or you mean like the rest of the episode, right?
Instead yeah, of yeah.
The scene,
I mean, this,
you mean the next 55 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, this really was the only part that was kind of funny that I actually laughed at. The rest of it was just, you know, bated breath.
There's one moment later that I actually found funny, but we'll get to it in a moment.
Oh, I think I might know what you're talking about, and if it's the same one, then yes, I did laugh too.
Yeah, I think it probably was, but go ahead.
But then we move over to Kira, and she's in her bedroom, and her light bulb doesn't turn on. She goes to reach for it, and electricity lights it up. And when she touches it, it explodes. Her mom comes in to change the light bulb, and the same thing happens with her mom. Did you guys expect for her to have the same powers as Kira?
I thought there was something. I don't know what it is exactly, but I thought there was something, given that, you know, the dad was like, your mum was the last of her family, you should be very proud of it. And I mean, exactly. Yeah. And they're all like, shut up, dad, don't tell everyone how we're supernatural. But like, but yeah, I mean, Claire's, I thought there would be something. I also noticed, I noticed that they were doing that like parent thing in shows like this, where it's like strange stuff starts happening to the kid, and you know they don't tell the parents about it, but then the parents know about it and they come in being like, what did you do? Even though they know the kid doesn't know what's going on, but they know what's going on. Kind of actually reminds me of what when we watched the original Teen Wolf movie, Karen, and the, you know, Michael J. Fox, you know, he's having all this freak out stuff and his dad's like, what's wrong with you? And then turns up being like, yeah, lol, so this is a thing. And that kind of annoys me when that kind of thing happens, because like to the parents, like, how dare you be all stern with them when you know exactly what's happening and they're freaking out and not knowing what's happening? Like, how dare you not be sympathetic or explain that and like just freak out? Like, you can't just like oppress that in people. You can't just like pretend it isn't happening and like, you know, be like, oh, if we ignore it, it'll go away. Like, what are you, like Vernon Dursley? Like, don't do that. But like, you know, like, I don't know. I don't like it when that happens, but I, you know, maybe she was just a bit startled or whatever.
Well, I have a question, and I don't remember. Is it just, I'm trying to remember when, during the sushi debacle dinner, is it true that just Kira's mom is Japanese and then the father? Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. So I'm just wondering, excuse me. I'm wondering if the father even knows anything.
I was wondering that too. I kind of hope he does, because I think, like,
he's that nice, would be, and I don't want his marriage to be crap.
And I would really like to see him be supportive of his wife and his daughter and be in on it, but I do have to wonder if he knows or not. I hope we find out soon.
And it kind of what happens with him later when he's translating for Allison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think if he was trying to cover something up, he would not tell them. You know, for example, with the theory that we have to read out later about the Oak Creek internment camp, like, if he knew anything about what the Oak Creek internment camp was, he wouldn't be, like, automatically, like, I don't know what this is. This didn't exist. It's a fake. You know, that, or he could be very good and very used to covering it up and sort of is sending them off track by being like, I don't know where this came from. It's a fake. Like, I don't know. It's very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Something else that really confused me actually was in the next scene when we go to Styles' bedroom. Isaac and Scott are there, and then Aiden and Lydia are there as well. And we see a pair of scissors embedded in the middle of Styles' bed with all the strings coming off of it and everything. And I don't know if this was just supposed to be something very visually like captivating and startling and a little scary, because it definitely was, but, and I was totally creeped out by it, but at the same time, I'm like, why would he do that?
Yeah,
I don't know if there's an answer to that.
I was wondering, well, we're going to get to that scene a little bit later, but I'm wondering if it's him putting it in his bed, meaning all points lead to him. That's one little theory I'm going with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
as like a warning, you know?
That was the intention. That, and I kind of assumed that, yeah, I mean, it was all pointing to him, but I don't know. It just seemed really weird. Like, why would you do that specifically? But like I said, it was like very creepy to look at. So maybe that's just kind of how they decided to represent it.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't he just tie it to a bedpost instead of a very sharp object? You know, it's like,
Yeah, I mean, it does make him look super crazy. So, you know, yeah, as Isaac helpfully points out. And I mean, for once, though, Isaac doesn't sound all like snarky and actually sounds, you know, he uses snarky words, but he's quite taken aback.
Mm-hmm. He was very subdued this episode, and I'm really glad they decided to go down that route, because I was not going to be okay with him sassing Styles while we knew, was bleeding out on a floor being attacked by this Nogitsune. And I think even in that scene when he was like, yeah, there's evidence of insanity here, even Scott kind of like gives him this look and he's just like, dude, don't even go there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was actually another thing that made this episode stand out in tone, was that you didn't have anyone sort of discrediting the crazy person, if you know what I mean. Like, you didn't have anyone being like, well, he's crazy, so we should kill him. I mean, you had the bit with Aiden and Derek, and it was, you know, Derek obviously immediately shut Aiden down, even though it sort of turned out to be true, and then Derek figured out how, you know, how it was possible. But you didn't have any of Styles' friends being like, oh, why are we, you know, bothering, or he's crazy, or he's dangerous, or anything like that. Like, you didn't have any of that back and forth, well, someone in the team discredits him and someone stands up for him, you know, that kind of thing is boring, and it's a bit offensive, and it was just all so worried and no questions asked, and I felt like that was quite different. You also didn't have anything of Styles, like, once he was found, and even when he talked to Scott, you didn't have anything of him speaking of Scott, you know, because he already told Scott, oh, I think that I'm the one doing stuff. You didn't have a repeat of that. Like, he didn't tell him, or at least we didn't see him tell him, like, what he'd been imagining or what he thinks going on in his head, unless he really doesn't remember it. So that, you know, again, I think that added to the tone of people just genuinely being concerned with him, not with the supernatural, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And something else that I'm really glad they decided to do, as opposed to what a lot of other shows don't do, and even what Teen Wolf has done before in the past, is that, you know, Lydia's the voice of reason here, and she tells Scott, look, you might have promised that you weren't going to tell Styles' dad that he's missing, but I never made that promise. And Scott finally concedes, and he's like, okay, wait, you know, yeah, I'll go tell him, and we'll find him. It was like, thank God you didn't have the whole miscommunication thing, or leaving the parents and the authorities out of the loop, because that is a really important resource to have when your best friend is missing and he's doing all sorts of crazy things. And, you know, at first I was like, oh God, this episode's just going to be like trying to keep the secret from the sheriff and trying to save him before anybody finds out. And within the first 10 minutes, the sheriff's clued in, and that was just a really big relief for me. I mean, it was horrible. It was really sad to see him that upset. And that was another one of those nonverbal moments where you can just see the pain etched on his face, but it was just so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was very, very good.
But the next big thing is we finally get to see Styles for the first time really in this episode, in this next scene where he's trapped in the basement. And I was really glad that we saw him throughout the episode, because a lot of the times when a character goes missing, we don't get their side of the story and it kind of deepens the mystery, but you didn't need that in this episode because everything was just going crazy. And we see that his foot is in a bear trap and that this bandaged man, as I've been calling him, I mean, it's the Nogitsune, but he shows up and he draws the kanji on the wall, meaning self, but it disappears when Styles says it out loud. What do you guys think that could mean?
God, I don't know. Like, I mean, to me, it's interesting that the crossover, Styles is imagining himself in this basement and he's not really there, or at least he was there and then he goes. So I'm very confused as to what is real, and I think he is too. And it's, you know, because he draws that kanji on the wall and then it's, you know, he's not actually in that basement, but when they go to the basement that he imagines himself in later, the kanji is there. So I don't know if it's like that he actually was there and then he went somewhere else, like, at any point or whatever. But, the kanji blowing away, I mean, it almost feels like he's, like, mocking him. Like, it almost feels like he's, like, I'm taking this away kind of thing. Like, you know, I don't know, man. It's very confusing. And, or that, like, you know, showing that it's something he can obliterate, kind of.
And I mean, he just, it was just, first of all, the voice, I was like, oh, please don't be Grandpa Argent. For some reason, his voice came through to me. I don't know why. And I was like, oh, maybe he learned some Japanese along the way.
Karen totally thinks it's Gerard, by the way.
I have
a very detailed theory about this.
We'll get into it. I'm sure.
Okay, good. All right, good. So I'm not the only crazy one. But I'm just kidding. But no, I'm just kidding. No. It's just the fact that, I mean, and going back to what we were just talking about, like, oh, you know, we can't say that he's crazy or something else, because they all genuinely thought that he was kidnapped and somebody has him trapped. So it's like, okay, then we get the shot of, all right, he's in the basement, and we have the guy with the scary teeth who we saw two episodes back, another, you know, but it's just like, oh no, there's another one, and it's after him. But wait, in the last episode, the last scene, he either absorbed the oh gosh, what are they called?
Kitsune, Oni.
The Onis, thank you. The Onis, like, either they attacked him or he absorbed them. You know, those other two that were about to, you know, go after him after he, you know, crushed the other one's firefly soul. But it's like, okay, wait, is he there? It's just...
Yeah, I mean, what I thought was really happening originally was that he was really somewhere, that he was possessed. We knew he was possessed. I thought that he was really possessed and really physically where he thought he was. And that was sort of where the Nogitsune, you know, home base was, and that he jumps in and out of him, if you know what I mean. That he, like, that he was compelled to go do things for the Nogitsune, and that this is where the Nogitsune was kind of keeping him, as opposed to it being in his own head and then going to somewhere else totally random. But I don't know, it's...
It's confusing.
Yeah, I mean, Karen, what do you think about the symbol?
I was really trying to pin this down and figure out what was going on, because I think it's obvious that the bandaged man that we're seeing is inside of Styles' head. And I think that it's just this representation of the Nogitsune that he can kind of put a face to, quote unquote. I mean, the dude doesn't really have a face, but, you know, it's kind of his way of fighting with this creature that's inside of him. But at the same time, something very real and physical is going on with Styles. And not only was he sleepwalking and he was struggling with himself, which we'll get to in a minute, to kind of, you know, stop himself from doing bad things, but that kanji was definitely on the wall. And the thing is that it wasn't drawn on there with chalk. It was scratched into the concrete, the cement. And I don't know if that happened before Styles was sleepwalking, and maybe it's just like a remnant of something else, but I mean, Lydia obviously thought that he was there, and I don't think she was wrong. There was something that connected Styles to that basement, and he clearly envisioned himself there, and Lydia thought he was there. So I feel like we just don't have all the information yet, and that some of this that we've quote-unquote learned is kind of like a red herring. And we're kind of being drawn in a different direction when we really should be paying attention to something else.
What? Teen Wolf throwing us off the track? What are you talking about? That's never, ever, ever happened. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's so stressful.
Jennifer, whatever.
I was so convinced. Anyway, I'm over it. Let's see, what's next? So basically we get the sheriff, they locate the Jeep, and it's at the hospital, and it's dead, and they're looking for him, and nobody knows where he is yet, but Derek and Scott go up to the roof, and basically smell Stiles' anxiety and his stress. And something that I wanted to point out was that you can go down a very silly route sometimes with a lot of this stuff that werewolves, and I mean, we remember when Scott stuck his head out the window and he was trying to, you know, locate, like, who is that? Lydia, I think, and do all of that. And I mean, it can be funny. Yeah, it can be funny, but at the same time, like, I really like how they can base it in science, and it can still be like a very serious thing. I mean, they're werewolves. They have enhanced senses. And so I think they're handling it really well.
They are. I mean, even – I'm sorry to interrupt you, Natalie.
No. I'm just making noises in the background. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, the fact that there is, as you were saying, Karen, it's like the science behind it, and that even goes back to – last week's episode when Derek is like, hey, stupid, you know, use your vision. You could see her aura around her. And it, like, I like how, yes, you know, and yeah, going back to the cheesy stuff of season one when he had his head out the window. Oh, when we were all so innocent back then.
I was saying last night, this episode, it's like I forgot that this show could, like, be funny. Like, if you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there was, like, I'm like, oh, what? This isn't, like, like, that this show has ridiculous aspects. I'm like, that's not it. Like, it totally, like, obliterated any of that from my memory. But a lot of the stuff they've done has impressed me in terms of, like, of science. Like, a lot of the werewolf behaviors and instincts and all of that kind of thing made me, yeah, really, I remember being very impressed that they could, like, sense Erica's epileptic seizures, because that is a thing dogs can do, if you know what I mean. Like, that they can, and like, I actually really like that a lot of the science is really enhanced, literally enhanced versions of real natural things, as opposed to just we've made up stuff, like, out of magic and, you know, supernatural powers or whatever. And it's interesting to me, but I don't know.
How you can smell stress, and like how Derek was smelling Stiles' stress and anxiety, it's like, wow, okay, interesting.
It's, it makes, like, sense.
Yeah, it does.
Well, it is, it is a thing, like, and you know.
Right.
And I don't know, it's just, can we talk about how zen Derek is, though?
Oh, yes, in a minute, please. In a minute.
You're like,
it's so good.
It's like such a relief. It's like, oh, yeah. Is this what we get in exchange for zen Derek, is that we get, like, fucking crazy Stiles? Like, is this our payoff? Like, thanks so much.
Oh god, I hope not, because I don't know if I can handle this. But
I have my theories, but that's a different story.
One of the next scenes was when Lydia starts hearing voices when she pulls on the strings in Stiles' bedroom, and I really liked that. I don't know why, but I thought it was so cool how they ended up doing that. Her powers are so mysterious and they're so layered, and I'm really excited to see where else they go with her.
Well, I mean, it seems like she might be ignoring them now, given that they failed her, like, which is kind of stressful, but we'll see. I mean, I know you put this at the end of the episode as one of the discussion points that people are asking a lot about, but the thing I really took away from that scene was Aiden finding that drawing and the note on the back saying, for Lydia. Like, that to me was total, like, no. Like, that's a clue. That's the same as the flowers in the first episode of season 3A. Like, that's not a throwaway thing. Like, saying for Lydia. You don't write that on the back of something that you keep for yourself, if you know what I mean. Like, I think that there's, like, a note maybe inside the frame or, like, something like that, like, whether it's a note about what's been going on with him or whether it's his, like, true feelings for her that, like, you know, if he ever dies, that, like, you know, it'll come out, or even, like, his will or some sort. Like, I think that it is definitely not throwaway, and that it was like pointed out by Aiden so that we'll remember it later. And because for Lydia is a really weird thing to write on, like, it's like, not like I have a photo of Karen in my room that says "for Karen" on it, if you know what I mean. Like, it's like
I have one. What the heck? Of course I do.
Like, just that part was really frustrating for me, though, because they were in his bedroom looking for evidence, and there's something that says "for Lydia," and she just kind of like puts it down and doesn't say anything else about it.
Well, I guess she just seemed... I mean, I guess the way it was presented, maybe if she'd found it herself, she would have thought differently, but the fact that it was presented to her and Aiden being like, "Oh, he really likes you," like, it kind of automatically put her head in something else, if you know what I mean.
I mean, it may, it's making, you know, certain parts of the fandom be like, "Oh," and then other people are like, like, it may not be a romantic, like we were just, like you guys are just saying, it's not necessarily a romantical type of thing. It's like, here, we're part of the Scooby Gang. You know, we have to, this is for you in case I lose my mind completely. Open this, you know.
Yeah.
When the time comes, kind of a thing. And as you were saying, it's going to refer back.
I think it's going to refer back in some way. But the strings, I don't know. It's interesting, the idea of like that each like string has like voices to do with that mystery, you know, whatever one it was connected to on the murder board, if you know what I mean. Like, it's...
Did you watch Wolf Watch, Natalie?
No, I haven't been able to get it. I'm going to have to catch up on it. But
okay. I think I know what you're about to talk about.
Go on, go ahead, though.
This is super relevant because Jeff has said that, well, for one, we're going to meet another Banshee this season, which I'm so excited for, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, but... He says that Lydia is, it's not necessarily about her screaming, it's about the voices she hears. And he references that she may be hearing the voices or the wailings of other banshees who are helping to kind of show her who's going to die next. And, I mean, help her figure out, like, what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, basically, those voices were other banshees.
That's quite weird.
That's interesting.
And then
I have a theory, but we'll talk about it later when we get to that point.
Then I guess as we discussed, they go along to the, you know, she thinks that he is at this mental institution, this Eichen house, and you know they go there and he's not there, and either he or someone else possibly possessed by the Nagitsune was there. You know, you know, if it travelled between people, that everyone involved with it was being sort of drawn back or imagining themselves in the same place. But we don't know if he's been there specifically, but, you know, it looks pretty old and untouched. But as we said, we don't know when the hell he was there or if he ever was, but there is some sort of connection. Next bit, while they're all out hunting Styles, is, again, the only bit in the episode I found funny. Which was...
Oh, yes.
Meat. I love him. I love him already. Please don't die. We meet Deputy Parrish, who we had some casting articles about in terms of, like, oh, new deputy, very pretty, etc. But basically, we see him in the first couple of scenes, you know, tracking the Jeep and stuff. But he's left on duty at the desk when McCall comes back into the station, not knowing what's going on. Oh, God. And sorry. I'm hysterical.
Poor Agent McCall.
I love it because everyone hates him so much. But he comes back in not knowing that stuff's wrong, and he... Oh, God. He basically is like, oh, any word on our, you know, mystery swordsman? Because he's all concerned about the fact that he got stabbed through the chest. So, number one, Agent McCall's alive. And number two, he clearly isn't filled in on the supernatural and just thinks he was stabbed by a guy breaking into his ex-wife's house with a sword, which is totally logical. Maybe since he thinks the world revolves around him, maybe he thinks like an assassin is after him because he's FBI or something. I don't know. But regardless, he was like, you know, and he was like, any word on our, you know, mystery swordsman? And Parrish is like, yeah, we got these posters up all around town for oh you. God. And they're posters of, like, these cartoon ninjas from, like, oh,
one was Zorro, and then the other one was like a Genghis Khan looking kind of thing. Yeah. It was amazing.
And I was like, oh my god. And he was like, yeah, we put these all up around town. And Paul's just like, not exactly how I described him to the sketch artist. And he's like, whatever, you're so not.
Parrish does not even care.
Yeah, he's so not our priority right now.
No.
And then McCall finds out about Styles, but just his attitude about the drawings, and I really hope there are drawings up out, all around town, like, you know, please report to Agent McCall if you have seen Zorro running around so people think he's crazy and take him away. But it was beautiful, and I just that little moment, I just love him Parrish already, and yeah.
If you've seen these Mortal Kombat characters, please contact.
I need it. Like, I need more of him.
Oh yeah, he was. That actually was the only other time that I laughed, and I mean, I've watched the episode twice, and I laughed just as hard, maybe even harder, the second time around.
I don't know if I really laughed in the scene with Aiden and Lydia. I was kind of like, oh, I roll you.
It was just the
Parrish scene, I was just like, yeah, that was good. And it was a nice tiny touch of like stress alleviation. Like, can you imagine going through that whole episode without, like, it's very carefully crafted to have like moments of like literal relief so that you don't go crazy and it's all too much.
And I think it's important to note too that like it was against Agent McCall, which pretty much nobody likes. Yeah. And so, you know, if it had been, like we said before, Isaac being sassy about Styles or something, would have been so pissed. But because it was against McCall, nobody cared and everybody thought it was funny.
It's just interesting to, like, you know, because that kind of thing, it's, you know, it's not like just, oh, natural storytelling. It's not just like the facts of the story. That's like purposefully done in the crafting of, like, you know, where to put a moment to alleviate that stress, or, you know, who to have it against. Like, that's very carefully done, I think, and it was good. So, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of Agent McCall, we get a little scene of him and Melissa, and they're trying to find Styles, and McCall thinks that he knows where he could be. And he also believes that Styles has been asleep this whole time. And he basically tells a little anecdote about when they were married, and this scene was really interesting to me, but it also made me so angry because McCall basically says, and well, Melissa, I think, is the one that really calls him out on it, but he came home drunk a lot and he's made some pretty obvious stabs against Sheriff Stilinski about having a drinking problem. And I'm like, you are such a hypocrite. You came home and you like peed in the laundry basket because you thought it was the bathroom, and you're, you know, taking it out on the sheriff, who obviously probably was drinking because his wife died. I mean, I don't have any sympathy for McCall anyway, but that just lowered him way further down on the totem pole for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, clearly McCall knows something about him that he doesn't want him to know, and so he uses any weapon he can to, like, undermine the sheriff, if you know what I mean? Like, he uses any, McCall uses anything he can to kind of undermine sheriff because of what sheriff allegedly knows. But, oh, what a dick.
No, I mean, that's just like when, let's say, there's two people who, like, smoke cigarettes, and then one of them stops, and then, you know, years later, oh, you know, they turn around and, like, how could you have that disgusting habit? It's like, dude, you did it too, really?
Yeah.
Like, how could you even say that? And not to mention that my wife died, so just like you were saying, maybe I wanted to go out for a couple of drinks every so often. But this guy, yeah, he's peeing in a closet. Like, ew. Like, which kind of... Like,
he obviously had a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, which also kind of scares me that I'm like, because I go through, you know, all right, if he's doing that, I hope to God Jeff, you know, never puts this in that he was abusive in any sort of way, which, of course, everybody thought that even before this poor man was ever cast. I mean, this was like season one.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, he beat Melissa up and blah, blah, blah. I hope that it wasn't. I hope it never goes down that way, which is maybe why Scott is so resentful. I hope not.
No, I feel like if he had, they would be more get the hell out of here. Like I if that did happen, Scott definitely doesn't know, and Melissa has made her peace with it in some way, like divorced him and made her peace with it and is able to be around him. But no, Scott, if that has happened, Scott did not know. Like,
although, I mean, there is still that one thing that's hanging above, you know, all our heads. It's like they're dangling that carrot that he had to tell Scott something just in case he died. And that's still in the back of my mind, too.
Yeah.
Not making him any more sympathetic. Don't get me wrong. I don't have any sympathy for him. But, you know, it's like, oh.
But I mean, I don't think that thing was like, I used to beat your mom, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, No. I'm not saying that. Yeah, no. I hope not.
Karen thinks it's that he has another family.
Oh, okay.
Like,
I don't think it was. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Like that Scott has like another, like that there's like a, you know, Scoot McCall out there or something.
Scoot McCall. Oh, wow. More attractive people on this show. I have no problem with this whatsoever. I have no problem with this.
Sorry. But anyway, the analogy that he made, like the anecdote for all it was, you know, crappy, was a good one in terms of, you know, being in a state where you can 100% be convinced of something that is not real, you know, for whatever reason that is, like, you know, drunk or sleepwalking or whatever. And so it's him that figures out that maybe Styles isn't where he's saying he is because, you know, because he's actually sleepwalking. And I mean, I don't know if people thought that he was already sleepwalking or if he'd been, if Scott thought that he'd taken himself somewhere via sleep, you know, because they said, oh, if he's sleepwalking, he kind of got that far. They knew that he got somewhere via sleepwalking, but like thought that he'd woken up and found himself in the problem, I guess, rather than still being deluded about what was happening. But apparently he took himself to the coyote den, like Malia Tate's coyote den, which is kind of strange, like why he would do that, like unless he thought it was like safe and, you know, a safe escape, or if, you know, Malia is going to turn out to be something protective later on, you know, whether he, you know, had been at the mental institution, because he was at the hospital. He really did go to the hospital and then took himself, got enough control of himself to take himself away. So maybe that was just a place that he thought, oh, I can't do any damage here or something.
I really want to know the mileage between all the different places, because he started out. It's everything walking distance in Beacon Hills. I'm confused. It's like, I guess the coyote den was a little bit closer to the hospital. Did he somehow teleport? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe he has that power too.
Find Malia for 8 years. Like, and they just left the car wreck there in the middle of the preserve. And the fact that Lydia was able to be missing for 2 days in those woods as well. Like, so it can't be that small. Like, that's always my thing. It can't be that small. But I don't know. If he knew directly where he was going, maybe it wouldn't take that long. But it is weird.
That's the thing. Like, the coyote den, I feel like this is significant. He could have, you know, they could have said he went anywhere. But no, he went back to the coyote den. And I know, like, maybe it was just a way to get that to click in Agent McCall's mind where he was, that they had a very logical reason for figuring out that he had gone there. But they could have done that 100 different ways. And the Malia plot line just kind of dropped after she was rescued. And I feel like there's got to be more there. There's got to be a significance. I feel like everything ties together. We just can't see the whole picture yet. And I wonder if, you know, this could just be a clue to maybe, you know, Styles is more tied up into this than we originally thought.
I don't know.
Yeah. We need more information, that's for sure.
We still have that. We still have what, you know, Peter and Derek were going through the first episode back. There were things that were just dropped that it's like, all right, Jeff, what are you doing to us?
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty sure they're all going
to
be
to come back.
Yeah, they've got to be picked up.
But in the next scene, you know, speaking of more stuff that we don't have enough information about, basically nobody knew what was going on with Allison because she wasn't answering her phone. And it's because it was turned off, and Allison's very confused because she never turns her phone off. She ends up having a voicemail in Japanese from a bunch of, well, from the same unknown number, but she has a bunch of voicemails that all say the same thing. They go to Mr. Yukimura, and he says that it's about internment camps, but it's Oak Creek internment camp, which is fake. It doesn't exist in California. And a lot of people really want us to talk about what the heck is going on with Allison, because they think that this is super significant. And this kind of shows that, yeah, what's going on with Styles is bad, but there's something going on with Allison too. And the fact that they've brought up Styles, you know, going dark so soon in the season means that it's going to take a twist later on, and that maybe this whole thing with Allison is setting up that twist. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's super weird. And she's kind of being a bit blank, and I don't know. I think that...
It is very weird. I mean, just the fact that she was like, I never turn off my phone. And it's like, okay, is something controlling your mind now too? Just that, like, the way that Styles was like, I don't usually, you know, like he usually doesn't do this, but then all of a sudden he did it. And it's like, I don't remember writing those numbers on that board.
Yeah.
So now she's like, I don't remember turning off my phone.
I mean, the visions that she was having at the start of the season to do with her drowning, if you know what I mean, like the Kate and all of that. Yeah, I mean, are we meant to assume that's just completely gone now, that they've all, like, you know, because, you know, everything going on with Styles is really frayed and weird, and Scott seems to be more resilient, whether it's because he's, you know, the alpha or just, you know, he has something else going on. But, like, is Allison just like, oh, yeah, okay, the door in her mind's closed, she's fixed, she doesn't have darkness around her heart anymore, everything's fine? I don't think so. No. Like, I don't think so. Like, you know?
I think the Styles thing is a distraction, basically. I mean, I think, like, what's going on with Styles is real, but I think that the real heart of the big bad and what's going to end up being in the finale isn't going to be Styles. It's going to have something to do with something that they're kind of laying breadcrumbs with now.
I just
keep thinking, like, this is the middle of the second half of the season, and things, you know, we get an episode like this, and it's so intense, and it's so crazy, and we still have, like, you know, 6 or 7 more episodes to go. And I'm like, I don't know if I can handle it getting worse.
I can't handle more episodes like that one.
No.
Yeah. Can next week's episode be like a musical or something? Like, I mean, please, I need happiness. Or at least just Derek shirtless for, like, more than 2 seconds. I mean, come on. Give us all a break at least. And not cut up and bloody. But, I mean, it's just... Even with last week, when Chris and Allison and Isaac went to what's his name? They went to go visit him, the guy, and he's like, "Oh, Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat." That's the only way I remember him. did you know? No, really, that's really
Karen's
the guy who
played. Yeah.
It's like we have Johnny Cage and.
She made me watch it. It's the worst movie in the world. Karen,
oh, no, it totally is.
Karen's obsessed with it.
Sorry, Lyndon, if you're listening.
She was so excited. Karen loves it.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, my God, it's Shang Tsung and Johnny Cage. Oh, my God, this is crazy. But the fact that he made that little comment about, well, you know, could be your daughter, too. And it was just a little, like, dun, 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 should have been inserted at that point. But I was like, you know, that's just Jeff playing with us. And then we get to this week's episode, and it's just like, wait a minute. Is this maybe a real thing that she's possibly, you know, is Kate somehow possessing her now or something? Who knows?
Yeah, they're definitely laying down the breadcrumbs, and I think it's just going to take a little while for it to all come together, but when it does, I think the whole thing's just going to blow up in our faces.
Sweet. And then we'll have to wait until 2015 for the next season, probably.
No. No, we'll get another season 4 will premiere this summer, won't it?
Will it?
Will it? I don't...
So.
That'll be only like a couple...
I think so.
Well, they're going to start filming again, you know, after this, right? Like, for season 4. Mm-hmm. Like, you know...
Actually, in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, in February, I thought.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, so mid...
Oh, okay.
I don't know how long it'll take for them to... you know...
I mean, if they premiere in June, I think that would be more than enough time.
I'm wondering, though, if they are... going to, because how many episodes do we have left now of this part of the season? About 6 around? Or
six,
how many?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, six. For me, it's like, you know, you have the extras, you have whatever, even though, you know, there was that one spoiler out there that, you know, something bad is going to happen to one of the main characters. It's like, are they going to not do the filming, or are they going to, like, really have like a really closed set just in case, because they don't want anybody taking pictures, or are they just, that kind of always gets to me, that's why I'm like, oh, I wonder if, but I guess you guys said that they are going to be start filming soon, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're gonna do. I mean, it won't be that long, like it'll only be a few weeks between, I guess, the season finale and the filming.
Okay.
But I don't know it's confusing, and It'll be weird to have a shorter gap between the seasons, because I don't know if they will premiere straight away in the summer, if they want to keep it for the summer, or if it'll go into the regular, you know, the regular,
like regular
time. Because, you know, we had to wait, you know, what, like 6 months, like, for, obviously they had, you know, season 3A in the summer and then 3B in the winter, and if they're going to have 4 straight away, you know, but between season 2 and season 3, there was a whole year. You know, it's going to be weird only having a few months between the end of this season and, like, the brand new start. So
Exactly. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw up the conversation.
Oh, no,
sorry.
It's fine. Don't worry.
No, that's, yeah, something I'm definitely wondering about, but we'll just have to see if they come out with more information soon once they start filming. But, you know, getting into, I think, the part that we really don't want to talk about is Styles, you know, he's found, obviously, and he goes to the hospital, and it turns out that his father had been writing down his symptoms for a couple of weeks, and Melissa's all worried about telling him what she thinks, but the sheriff's already kind of there, and it doesn't make it any easier, but he basically says that Styles needs to be tested, and so they end up going to do that. Meanwhile, Lydia starts hearing this banging, but she ignores it, and that part really frustrated me, because I'm like, you can't ignore your powers. You might not understand them, but you need to figure it out, because ignoring it isn't going to help anybody. Even if you're wrong, at least you're trying to move in the right direction. And I hate it when,
especially since
they
end
up doing that.
Like, especially since he was the one that kind of, like, Styles was the one that, like, told her, like, you know, every time you've had this, it's been right. Like, just, you know, I will do anything to prove it to you and trust yourself and stuff. And it's, like, her failure to get him that makes her be like, screw this. And it's highly frustrating.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, it's frustrating, too, because... Well, we're going to go into, you're going to talk about the sound of what it was, but it's frustrating for us, you know, just watching. It's like, oh, just tell someone, please, come on, you can, come on. And then, no, it's fine, I'll just blast the music or whatever.
But then it does seem to get a bit confusing in terms of, like, whether she, you know, because you see people's, like, you know, lockers closing and all of that, doors and things like that. And it seems it gets a bit muddled as to what is actually just in her head and whether what she's just being super sensitive to in real sounds, if you know what I mean. And I think that's purposely
true.
Done, but it gets very lost, so.
That's very true. So last week, Natalie, you said that you wanted Derek and Kira to join together and kind of nerd out. And they didn't really nerd out, but they did join together. And they went to the power station because Derek wants Kira to explain and show him everything that happened at the power station. And
I like he just showed up in the high school again, like yes. The olden days.
Yes.
Creeping on teens. Oh yes. My god, it's so weird. Oh.
Yeah.
But he wasn't mad this time as much.
No, he was way more zen, yeah. But I also know that apparently this is one of Robbie's favorite scenes because he chose a line from this before we decided that we basically just wanted to talk about our feelings for half an hour. So why don't you go into this scene a little bit, Robbie?
Oh no, really? Are you gonna make me do this? Oh no, I'm gonna crack up. Okay. So Derek basically has Kira take him to the power station, and when they're there, she's walking through, all right, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. They come to one of the power station boxes, I guess you could say, and lo and behold, what is somehow sticking to it is Styles' bat. Now, yes, my line that I picked was just Derek in his monotone voice saying, it's Styles' bat. And I wrote this on Tumblr, and I basically said, now 45,000 Steric fanfics have just been, you know, written
about
as this
bat.
Just, it's like at every, because there's always something about the bat. And he goes through it and pulls it off and realizes that it was somehow drawn, it was pulled across the floor, and then it's magnetized. And through all that, since he's all scientific now, he figures out that that Kira's Foxfire jump-started the Nagitsune's powers in Styles, which is pretty... I actually did have to laugh at the next scene with the two of them. That actually made me laugh, but we'll get to that
A
little bit. And I mean, just the fact that, like, you know, it's Styles' bat. It's like, okay, how does he know that? But then I remembered when they were in the elevator with Jennifer... during that,
yeah.
Like, he did have that, like, you know, threatening Jennifer at any second to beat her. But the fact is that that scene, just that one little line, made me crack up. Although, again, it's been like this whole entire me holding a pillow and rocking back and forth. It's like, oh,
anything's
God, what? Exactly. Like, it's like, all right, he's in the hospital, he has all of these Styles has all these symptoms, and I was just like, okay, fine, his bat is okay, though, that's good, and it's magnetized, so
yeah, I mean,
who knows what's going on.
I was so confused, not confused, but that whole scene was very, like, weird, like, I didn't really follow how Derek figured it out, if you know what I mean, like, he is all scientific now, and, you know, I think, suppose we should take that very seriously, but, like, I didn't get, like, how bat got magnetized, made him figure anything out, like, if you know what I mean, like,
yeah, I didn't get the whole entire dragging across.
Yeah, like I think maybe, like, Styles was, like, holding it, and it got, like, you know, and why he was like, you need to tell me everything you figured out about Foxfire right now, and then looked at, like, the danger high voltage thing, like, if you don't tell me right now, I'm gonna die from high voltage or something.
Yeah,
I was really,
like,
confused by that. Like, I was like, I do not know what happened there. I was very lost by what he was trying to figure out, but clearly there's something going on in his head about the entire situation, and clearly he's paid enough attention to Styles' bat in the past to recognize it. So that's
I'm letting that one go.
I would love to spend some time inside Derek Hale's head and just figure out what he thinks about, because he stood there in silence for so long, and it's just there's a world. There's a world in there that you could, you know.
So, yeah, so Derek, you think about Styles' bat a lot, or what goes on? I'm confused. Are you happier that now that it's metal instead of wooden?
He's like the fandom. He's like the fandom in their, you know, fascination with Styles' bat, clearly, because it's a major player to a lot of people. So
it is.
It totally is. I mean, it's getting up there on par with Roscoe the Jeep. Like, people always talk about the bat.
It was a peculiar scene, but poor Kira is just, you know, and of
course, what the hell? She know who? I mean, I know Derek was at Scott's house, but like he just walked into school being like, "You need to come with me and tell me everything about the power station." It's like, okay, are you a cop? No.
Obviously,
like what?
Obviously, the McCall pack did not tell Kira about Derek and everything
maybe Scott did, like, text her and be like, look, all right,
so this guy.
Exactly.
He might show up randomly from the shadows. He's fine. Like, he's fine. Just go with it. He'll be fine.
As long as he's wearing his leather jacket, you'll be okay.
Like, don't be too worried. He'll just show up. And he doesn't understand social conventions, but he's on our side. It's cool.
He has a mom car now instead of
oh my god,
really cool Camaro.
Yeah.
But I miss
that Camaro so bad. Okay.
Maybe he sold it to get tickets to South America. But anyway.
That's pretty logical conclusion.
Well,
actually,
I know they have a. He has a lot of money anyway, like life insurance. Yeah. Said so. Anyway. Yeah. So allegedly he figures out that the Foxfire jump started the Nagitsune's power in style. I have no idea how he made this conclusion. None. But whatever.
No. But let's talk about the thing we really don't want to talk about. And I have a feeling this is the scene that destroyed a lot of us. But basically we finally find out what Claudia died from. And she died from frontotemporal dementia, which is basically when parts of your brain start to deteriorate and you have all the symptoms that Stiles has been having. And they're going to look into see if Stiles has it. And this is the scene that's being referred to as the hug with, you know, capital T, capital H, because Scott and Stiles have a very significant and beautiful scene here, and I know that we've been talking on and on and on about how amazing Dylan is, and he is. He's completely amazing, but Tyler Posey has been doing a phenomenal job this season as well, and I think this scene was really subtle work for him with, you know, the tear, and he kind of like rubs it away, and he tells Stiles that he will do anything to save Stiles's life, even if he has to, and I mean it's implied, but even if he has to give him the bite and turn him into a werewolf, he will do anything to save Stiles. And it was just a beautiful scene where friendship is really at the forefront, and it has been for most of season 3, actually, even including 3A with Motel California. And I really enjoy the fact that romance is kind of taking the back burner right now, and it's all about friendships and being best friends and Stiles and Scott.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was actually going to refer to something that you said before, Natalie, about how you were saying watching Dylan on screen was like watching a documentary of, mm-hmm. you know, this. But for me, that scene, and maybe you're about to say this, it's like it wasn't Stiles and Scott. It was Dylan and Tyler and their yes. friendship, because that's really how they are in real life. That, like, God forbid anything happened to either one of them, the other one will step up and do anything that they could. And it was just, it's like, oh, you see that, like, that friendship bleed onto the actual TV show and come out and just stab us in the heart 82 times. But it was beautiful.
And the when it sort of pans away, like that conversation, and, you know, obviously Scott implying that, you know, he'll figure, you know, he'll do something about it. You know, number one, I like they didn't sort of spell it out, and they just, there was just a lot being sort of said there with their eyes, but when they panned away and it sort of showed their parents' faces and the parents watching them hug as well, that was really, like, I've kind of had trouble in the past. I know that they've talked a lot at different times about you know, how long Scott and Stiles have been friends, whether it was with since they were little kids or whether it was like teenagers or whatever. When we interviewed, you know, Melissa, she said she thought that they'd been since they were very small. But that kind of hug and like watching their parents watch them was legitimately the first time in the show that I've ever really felt like they've spent their whole lives together, if you know what I mean. Like, there's been lots of, it's not that I don't believe in their friendship and there've been other amazing moments, but that was like a moment that I really, really was like, you know, felt that it could have been their whole lives and that their parents were probably seeing them as 5-year-olds, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that it's important too, that Melissa and the sheriff walked out first and kind of let Scott and Stiles have a moment alone together. To me, that shows that even they recognize that they're that close and that it, not that it trumps the relationship that the sheriff has with his son, because obviously they're very close and it's a very important relationship, but there's something to be said for the fact that those two were the last ones in the room, that Scott was the last one to leave, and that they had that significant moment together in the end.
It was absolutely beautiful. It was a great, and it just like you were saying, it's like, oh, these they grew up together, they did this, and now it's like, this is real life now. It's not a monster coming down the hallway about to kill him. It's like, wow, there might be something really wrong. That's an actual medical thing. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's like every other problem that they faced has kind of like been, you know, outside of reality, and that they've kind of, treated it as like, you know, lol, this is our lives, even if it has been massively high stakes. But yeah, I don't think you've ever really seen Scott like that. Like,
it's one of those things that we were talking about this episode being so based in reality. It's just like one of your best friends saying, hey, you know what, I have cancer or I have this, and it's just like, what? No, what are you talking about? There might be a chance that I might. So it's,
yeah, and I mean, I think that with shows like this as well, like with the Supernatural show, and I mean, you can compare this to Buffy the Body, like you mentioned before. It's like, once these people have sort of adapted to the idea that there's like a supernatural in the world, it's almost like they sort of forget about, you know, the real world problems that already existed. They're like, oh my god, but these kind of things can't happen to me. You know, we live in a world where there's like werewolves and banshees and stuff. Like, it sort of brings them back to a place, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't really.
Yeah, you can physically fight the things that show up, the Drock, the Kanima, those sort of things. This, you can't fight, you know. I mean, yeah, maybe Scott can give him the bite and they can fix it, but who knows if he'll even survive from that. I mean, it's not something that you can actively, like, hunt down and beat the crap out of and solve your problems. And I think that makes it a million times scarier.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is that when Scott first said it, upon first watching it, before I went up to Tumblr and heard everyone's opinion, when he said, I'll do anything to save you, when he was saying that, the bite was not even the first thing that came to my mind. Because, again, it was that whole entire thing based in reality, which, of course, and I was like, oh, well, I guess that's probably what he meant. But the way I interpreted it the first time watching it was, he'll do anything, whether it's, you know, helping with, you know, just being there for him if he has medical treatments or something like that. That's the way my mind went, at least. That he was just, that's what their friendship is based on. Whether or not Scott was a werewolf or not,
he would have said the same
thing. He would have said the same exact thing. So, again, it was the supernatural stuff kind of took like a back seat there for a second. And it was just that the core friendship, no matter what, before Scott turned into a teenaged werewolf, that this was always going to be the way that they were going to be, no matter what.
Yeah,
I think it was a very layered comment, definitely. I mean, the bite was the first thing that popped into my mind, but at the same time, you could tell that although that was one of the options, that wasn't everything that he meant, that it was very layered and that he would be willing to do everything. And what I thought was really interesting, too, was the little nod that Styles gives Scott, because to me that was kind of like permission. And I think that the bite would be a last resort, definitely. But the fact that they're addressing this and that it's a possibility is just really kind of scary, but also a really interesting thing to play with in terms of the character and giving that choice, you know, if he will turn into a supernatural creature or not.
Mm-hmm.
big sigh. Let's exhale. Let's talk about Derek, because once, Derek kind of gives us happiness in this episode. That doesn't happen too often, but we get Zen Derek, and we get this spiritual leader. Oh my God, it's the best. We get this great scene between Scott and Derek, where basically Derek tells him some things and says that his family used to protect Beacon Hills, and that Scott is the type of person that should be protecting Beacon Hills. And Scott kind of says, well, I need somebody to teach me the trade secrets, and that's what you're here for. And it is the most conclusive piece of evidence, I think, the most obvious piece of evidence that they are on the same level now, that they're thinking about the same things, that they're willing to work together. There's no tension. There's no conflict between them anymore. And I think a lot of it has to do with crazy Zen Derek. I love it too.
My God.
I don't think it came out of nowhere, but at the same time, it's such a change from what we've seen in him. Yeah, it's great.
It's great, but it also scares the hell out of me. I'm like, oh, please don't do something horrible to him. Please, Jeff, don't do it. He's finally happy.
Yeah. Maybe they'll be like, he'll die at peace. But when Scott said, you know, what you told me about controlling a shift with anger, and Derek was like, I think you taught me more about that, actually. Like, can you imagine season one Derek actually have ever saying that? Like, yeah.
No.
Like, there's so much meta and stuff about people being like, oh, my God, Derek needs to chill and he needs to become more at home with himself, and he's clearly his advice is clearly coming out of a really bad place and all of that stuff, and he's sitting here saying it now, like, what, like, how is this real?
It's so amazing.
It's so and then you have, you know, and then you even go, yes, I'm just gonna do a Derek Styles thing right now, but it's the fact that you go from, you know, Styles being completely terrified of Derek, and Derek kind of like, you know, bashing his head on the steering wheel, and, you know, all of that. Good times. you know, but having him not trusting, they're not trusting each other, and especially Styles not trusting Derek, and then Derek just has that one scene with Aiden when they're, first of all, Derek is jump starting Styles' Jeep. And he's like, why would he want to go after poor little defenseless, skinny little Styles when he can go for somebody with more power? And it's like, all right, why are you Zen, but yet you want the trouble to come back to you, Derek? Are you talking about yourself? You want to be possessed? What are you doing? Come on, you're happy place now. Stop it. So it's just how he has changed, and Derek is now really caring about the fellow members of his pack, which is basically, I think that's what everybody is now to him, and how he's finally accepted, and he has accepted his role as, all right, I'm not the alpha, but just like you were saying, that bromance between Scott and Derek was just like, aww, and the close-ups was just like, oh, tears. Yeah,
that hallway scene was real. It was real.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And just how he is just reassuring Scott, you know what, you know, we'll figure it out. We'll be, you know, we'll take care of it. So.
Yeah. And they do figure it out. And I like the way that they work together, and they end up going back up to the roof, and they realize that Styles was fighting with himself the whole time in order to protect everyone against what he was about to do. He was cutting through a wire at the hospital, and we sort of see the ramifications of that later on, but he basically, as far as I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he basically kidnapped himself in order to save everybody, right? Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he kind of struggled with himself and then took himself away from the situation.
Which is just, I mean, how do you... let's... Like, seriously, Derek wasn't wrong when he was like, poor little defenseless skinny Styles. I mean, Styles has said it before. I'm 147 pounds of pale skin and fragile bones. And, you know, it's true. And yet he can fight off this Nagitsune that's inside of him and kidnap himself and drag himself out into the middle of the Beacon Hills Preserve to keep everybody safe. There's a lot of inner strength in Styles, and I'm really excited to see that.
Yeah, very much so, because I would also, you know, I would love to actually see whether they do it from different camera angles. You know, my fantasy is that there's an extended cut of him actually, as you were saying, kidnapping himself, and just the way that, like, one camera would be like less, there'd be like less light on him, and then the next shot will be like lighter. It's like basically he's going back and forth between personalities, kind of just saying like, all right, no, I got to do this first. And then the Nagitsune is like pulling him back. And I don't know. I just, the inner struggle that he is going through and what's going on in his head is just World War III, you know?
Yeah. Like it is interesting that we literally, like, you know, he calls Scott like after he's got himself out of that situation, if you know what I mean, like after he's used all his energy, fighting that situation. But, I wonder how long they've been planning this, like Jeff or whatever, like how long he has known Dylan would be doing this or was capable of it or whatever. Like,
who said somebody, I read something on Tumblr. You could just look at the credits, how he's coming.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. Like, yeah. In every, they've had that. They've had that for a really long time.
Yeah, he's the only one that really hasn't changed.
Like, in that he goes from, like, light, and, like, you know, he's lit up, and then he blocks out the light, basically. And those credits are meant to be super symbolic, you know, symbolic. Those credits are meant to be super symbolic, yeah. So,
well, because his is the only one that really hasn't changed.
Yeah,
right.
That's literally why I was just asking that. I'm like, I'm wondering if this is the end game from the start. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised, because I think they realized, you know, what Dylan could do pretty early on. So I think that they've probably been planning a darker, more dramatic role for him, probably for a while.
Times.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I really enjoyed Lydia in this episode, even though she kind of, not that she took a backseat because she was pretty significant, but she's sort of going crazy along with Styles. And I think that it's a whole different ballgame and a completely different reason, but I really enjoyed seeing her struggle with that. And you know, she ends up hearing the banging from the MRI machine, and she ends up screaming again, and hopefully we'll get maybe another revelation in the next episode, because this sort of didn't pan out in this specific episode after she screamed. But it was so interesting to see how closely she's tied to Styles and how she was hearing that MRI machine even before he actually went into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something. I mean, now, as they said last season, you know, 3A, she's something. But the fact that now she has this psychic link with him.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very strange. Is it only him? Is she, you know, just saying going crazy? Is she hearing other things? As far as we know, obviously, she's just going right for Styles right now because she's somehow connected. But is it she connected to him because he's possessed? Is that why it's like kind of like pinging in her head? Or
is it, yeah,
something. Is it, yeah, or something else?
I don't know. I have very few answers. I mean, you know, I don't think we're meant to have answers, obviously, but I'm very indecisive about this because part of me is like, well, they're very close now and they get each other. Maybe that's the reason. Well, then again, she was his anchor for when they had to go under the water and, you know, be the surrogate sacrifices. Maybe it has something to do with that. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that it's the Nogitsune and she's connected with that and therefore is connected with Styles. And I think that it could be any of those things. And this actually kind of plays into, you know, the next scene where we figure out that Styles, parts of his brain show sign of atrophy. So he basically has what his mother has. And a lot of people are like, wait, okay, is it the Nogitsune? Does he really have it? Is it a combination of both? I don't know. There's so many answers for both of these things that I don't know if it's a combination. I don't know if one's causing another. Or vice versa. It's so confusing.
It is.
I mean, the options are basically in that situation that either the Nogitsune, either he does not have the dementia and the Nogitsune is causing what looks like what they think it is, if you know what I mean. Or the Nogitsune is purposely preying on someone that already has a weakness in that way, if you know what I mean. Or that it's, you know, both in a sort of not related but exacerbating each other way. Like, it's kind of, I don't know. It's very...
And you know what? It goes back, but then it makes you think, it's like, all right, wait, was his mom possessed?
Yeah.
Or did she already have this in her? Or, you know, or did something happen? You know, we're all still hoping for that flashback episode.
Oh, God. I think they can't avoid it now.
Yeah, I mean, they can. Again, Holly Marie Combs has not been on Pretty Little Liars for a couple of weeks, so she is available. Anyway.
Why do you want her so much?
You know what's funny is that because I was huge, I still am a huge Charm fan, the way that her character Piper is like the exact way that you think Styles' mom would be portrayed.
She's
sarcastic.
Right?
She what?
She was the oldest of the three.
She was, yeah, she became the oldest after Shannon Doherty left. Yes. Yeah. She became, yeah, so she had, I don't know if you ever, did you ever watch Charms?
Oh, very sporadically.
Oh, okay. They have a couple of YouTube clips or whatever. She has that, like, sarcastic wit to her, and she kind of looks like him. And I'm not the only one. I was not the one who started this whole entire craze, I do have to say. But she, the way that... What?
I thought you were.
No, I really wasn't. No, I actually read it on something on Tumblr. It's like, I really like Holly Marie Combs to play Styles' mom on Teen Wolf. And this was like before I even got on, like really got into Teen Wolf. And I was like, what are they talking about? And I was like, as soon as I saw Teen Wolf and how Dylan acted, I was like, ah, now I get it.
Yeah.
That she has that. Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah. So, I mean, that was the whole entire thing about, like, linking them up together. And I was just like, wow, she really would be good because she would play that sarcastic quality but then have that really good maternal thing, which is what she did on Charmed. So, I mean, I kind of was on that bandwagon a little bit late. But, yes, I am one of the, like, you know, the front cars now of the Holly Marie Combs as Claudia Stilinski train. So, but I mean, but going back, it's just going back to what this is. It's just then that makes you go back and it's like, oh, God, was she possessed? Was she part of more of a storyline of things that happened in Beacon Hills prior to everything? And did she? And of course, what I read on Tumblr, which made me even sadder, it's just like, OK, he was there when she died. And then now we have this whole entire thing with her having dementia. It's like she didn't even know who he was when she died. On top of that, it's like, ugh, really? Sorry if that just kind of killed the moment. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
We're dead anyway. Who cares?
It's just like, we'll just pour more lighter fluid. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there are tons of options here, and until we know more, I think it's going to be really hard to really kind of go in one direction or the other without ignoring some, you know, pretty big facts, because there are a lot of red herrings, but there's also just a lot of options that could apply to a bunch of different theories. And it'll be interesting to see which way they end up deciding to go in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Style slips back into his dream state in the next scene, and we see the Nagitsune again, and he asks the riddle, and this whole episode has been sort of centered around these riddles, and the main one is, everyone has it, but no one can lose it, and it ends up being a shadow, and that's when the bandaged man unravels it, and it's Styles under there. And I was not expecting that. I was convinced that it was going to be Gerard, and I was so excited we were going to get a reveal, and then it was Styles. But do you guys think that it really is Styles, or do you think that, you know, that it's himself, that the Nagitsune is just sort of, like, impersonating him? Do you think that it could be somebody else?
I mean, I think it's sort of showing him to himself in the way that he, you know, recognizes or makes it him feel the most influenced. Like, if Styles thinks, oh my god, this is actually a part of me, he might be less, he might believe he can fight it less than, like, oh, you are a separate thing to me, I can get you out, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
I think he's showing himself to him in that way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. It's I mean, he is the shadow self of Styles. So, I mean, again, I think that it's kind of like a light switch that's in Styles' brain right now. It's like, all right, on, it's Styles, off, it's, you know, Nagitsune. It goes kind of back and forth. And it's just, I mean, because they were just saying, because the Oni is like, you know, they have like no face or anything. I'm wondering if that's kind of what is inside Styles right now, because since it, you know, that he said that it's a shadow and the Oni kind of, you know, when they take their mask off, it was just, it looks like a dark shadow, basically dark cloud. I'm just wondering if it's just kind of like he's in there kind of like switching on and off. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that there's two separate people. If that, because I read something that's like, oh, it's two separate people. That's why he like left, or, you know, when he left the MRI, that like he was kidnapped, or I don't know. We're never gonna know.
I mean, we've talked about before about how, I mean, Jeff's brought up that he's putting in, I think it was the Jungian philosophy. I probably butchered that, Jungian but philosophy. It was. Yeah, but it was the shadow selves and that sort of thing. And it's, you know, here we go. This is that in action. But at the same time, something I noticed was the jacket that the Nagitsune is wearing has a patch on its arm. And I had to do some crazy Photoshop skills to get a good look at it because this episode was so dark. But it turns out that that patch has a white star with a yellow circle in the center and red circle in the center and yellow wings. And I found it, and it's United States Army Air Force patch from World War II. Oh, and boy. So I don't understand how that fits in. I mean, if this guy is just in Styles' head, if it's basically Styles, like the evil version of Styles coming in and out, why is he wearing basically an army jacket from World War II? And, you know, it makes me think, like, could this be an American soldier? And there's been, you know, we'll get into it in a little bit about this World War II meta that Robbie posted on his Tumblr that is absolutely amazing. But fireflies are supposed to be like, you know, the souls of dead soldiers or something like that. And everything kind of comes together. And that's why I keep thinking, like, there must be more going on that we just do not understand yet.
Mm-hmm.
Are you stressed out yet?
Nah.
Yet? That's 24 hours.
Yeah. Well, let's finish up the main part of the discussion, which is basically when Styles goes, like, totally evil. And we've already talked about how amazing Dylan is, so I'm not going to go there because he was freaking awesome right here. But there's this power surge that he set up earlier, and he's able to slip away. And who shows up but Mrs. Yukimura? And she has control over the Oni, and she says that she doesn't care if the Nagitsune is inside an innocent kid, she will kill it anyway, because she knows how evil it is. And then she basically threatens the Nagitsune with something even worse than the Oni, but we don't find out what it is. And I have a theory about this, so I need to know if you guys think I'm totally nuts.
Okay.
But Jeff mentioned that we're going to be meeting another Banshee. And I'm wondering if the Banshees have some sort of ability. I mean, we don't know much about their powers yet, but if they have maybe some control over being able to defeat something like the Nagitsune. And I know that, you know, at the very end of the episode, the camera turns to Kira, and we're supposed to think, oh, maybe Kira's going to be the one that can defeat the Nagitsune. But I have a feeling that's a red herring, and that maybe this is all going to come down to Lydia and another Banshee, and we're going to find out more about the Banshee's powers and all of that.
I, you know what? I even heard a theory that Lydia's mom might be.
Mm.
I don't know. That might be a Banshee, and then that's like a whole entire family trait.
Oh my god, this town.
It's weird because if you go back to like when Peter bit her and you know she was attacked and it's like kickstarted just like the electrical thing and you know how Kira kickstarted the Nagitsune and Styles that Derek figured it out. Maybe Derek is going to explain everything next episode. You never know.
God, I hope so.
Yeah, come on, Derek. We need an educational video.
College degrees. Let's do this.
I mean, is it... I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what... And yeah, I do believe you, Karen, that it is a red herring when they cut to Kira.
I don't think Kira is going to be defeating anyone for some reason.
No.
She looks too startled all the time.
I would imagine that her mom would be, like, way better at defeating Nagitsune than Kira would,
Maybe it's, like, a brand new Kitsune. Like, a brand new one is, like, their powers are stronger. Like, oh, God, I hate having to make Twilight references. But, yeah, okay. But in Twilight, when someone becomes a vampire, they are the strongest they will ever be. Like, right when they become a vampire. So maybe, yes. Like, a brand new Kitsune is, like, has more power than, like, a grown-up one? I don't know.
It's like, maybe it's a true Kitsune, like a true alpha.
Oh my god.
they'll have different, you never know with the show, you never know. It might happen.
A different type of Kitsune, and that type happens to be able to fight off the Nogitsune better or
she's
something.
She's a yes but... Kitsune.
She's a what? Oh.
A yes Kitsune.
Oh, that's so bad.
I'm sorry. I'm very stressed.
I know.
I could use her. Some of my light bulbs just went out. I don't mind. She can come over here. She's very useful.
Somebody tweeted us and was like, yeah, I was watching this episode and 3 light bulbs in my house went out. And I'm like, dude, that's
one
really
went out
scary.
Today.
You need to like go talk to your local nice Kitsune to have them turn them back on for you. But that would be terrifying.
I mean, you never know. You never know. I can't imagine what else there could be, whether it is a Banshee or it's...
Lydia was wearing a jumper with unicorns on it, so there's probably unicorns.
Yes.
Yes.
Finally.
And maybe Kira will ride a unicorn into battle.
She would love that.
I know,
okay.
She would just be screaming like... Yeah.
Well, first of all, a unicorn, really, and I'm allowed to say this, but like really, like as if this show isn't gay enough as it is, really, we're gonna add a unicorn, really?
Unicorns.
yes, there is. There's a lot of things. I know why, because I wanted, what was that one? That one who designed all those like Trapper Keeper folders back in the day?
Oh, Lisa Frank.
Yes, Lisa Frank. I wanted that when I was like 5 years old, and really my parents should have known back then, because it had like unicorn with like the rainbow coming out of its butt and everything. I mean, that's like, come on. Lisa Frank, yes. Yes.
Wow.
You never know. You never know.
Oh, well.
well. This totally went to a place again.
We had to. Yeah. It was necessary.
Heroes can ride a unicorn into battle. And so is
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Before we can talk about the World War II thing, we might as well just get all the unicorn stuff out.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. The first piece of feedback that I really want to get into was from a Hypeable article. I believe this was on our recap, and it was from Elsevier. And they said, what a great episode. I'm still shaking. Also, the Nemeton still seems to play a part. The Japanese imprisonment camp in Allison's phone calls was called Oak Creek. And the insane asylum was called Eichenhaus, which is German for Oak House. Interesting. I'm curious if that's just an Easter egg or will be important for the future. And that was definitely something I didn't pick up the first time around. I don't know German, so I didn't know that Eichenhaus was, you know, German for Oak House. And so I think this is really cool, and I definitely think it's an Easter egg. And, you know, that's – we've gotten tons of references to Oak, and so this has to be significant somehow.
Like, if the Durak and the Druids and all of that, like, oh, maybe the Nagitsune is Deaton. Mm-hmm. Deaton's annoying. He's useless, so –
all we got was a text from him this episode. Yeah. Still working on it. Yeah,
thanks,
well, work fast,
bro.
Dude.
Like, you're the worst. And then, basically, I guess sort of tying into the situation, Robbie, you had something on your Tumblr, and I don't know if it was just a reblog or if it was anything that you wrote yourself.
Oh, no, I did not. I could not. I could not write this. This was so amazing.
There's, like, some really intense meta about Japanese-American internment during World War II and Teen Wolf and then the Oak stuff. So do you want to maybe just take us through that, like, briefly? This is like 1,000 words of writing.
I will briefly do it, yes.
But basically there's some ideas here about, like, what that internment camp might have been, so...
They actually were saying, and I mean, these, unfortunately, in real life, they were these internment camps, and... anybody who had sort of any Japanese ancestry was rounded up and they were put in there. Yeah. Except that this person said perhaps they used the then legal detainment as a way to trap and kill Kitsune.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll find out this in a flashback episode that's going to be coming up. And then there was a whole entire thing about fireflies, is that, and we were just talking about that, how it's not only a symbol of love, but it's also supernatural meaning too. It could be the altered form of souls of soldiers that have died in war. And this gentleman, this person who posted this also referenced a movie called The Grave of Fireflies, mm-hmm. Which is not only a representation of the soldiers that died in World War II, but of also the innocent citizens who died from the side effects of war, such as starvation, that happened in these camps. That could be going back to what Karen was saying about the patch on the jacket, the World War II thing. It could be this is a revenge spirit of some sort. Mm. I'm trying to like think, and then they go into a whole. The post is on my Tumblr, and it goes all about different oaks and druids and that kind of stuff. All coming back.
Yeah, and I mean, basically, what the kind of the outcome was of these several people putting new ideas into this post is that there might be the possibility that this Oak Creek was an internment camp, not mm-hmm. a legal government one, but a hunter-run one that was rounding up Kitsune and other shifters, and because of the laws about internment at the time, they sort of got away with it, basically, and that the internment camp might have been around or in Beacon Hills because of the Oak Creek and the Nemeton and all of that kind of thing, and that basically what the Beacon Hills Preserve is might have used to be an internment camp for basically the supernatural during that time when those internments were happening. And it might have been run by crazy ass like hunters
It makes so much sense to me, because that's something that I could definitely see them doing, especially back then when maybe things were not, you know, they weren't as quite as understanding as Chris Argent is now. And I had like, okay, this is why I don't write meta, because I always write myself into a corner and it doesn't end up working out, and it's so disappointing. But I was convinced that this had something to do with Gerard and that it made so much sense that it all kind of came back to him between the camps with the hunters and all of that. But I did the math and, like, Gerard would have to be, like, 90 years old, even if he was 18 when the war broke out and, you know, they got involved in all of that. And I don't think Gerard's 90 years old. If he is, then dude is in shape. But
yeah, I mean, it could have been his parents. Like, you know, it could have been, you know.
Yeah, I mean, somebody did mention him in there. Yeah.
An Argent thing, which I think would be really interesting.
And this ties up with Mrs. Yukimura having ties to the area and being special in her family because she was, like, the last one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I mean, this person that I actually reblogged it from, the name is Kumakawa, who writes some of the best metas I've ever read about Teen Wolf, and most of the time they come true. And I'm just like, wow. I'm like, wow, you're good. So definitely check that out.
We'll link to that in the post.
Definitely. And he actually did mention, or she mentioned, Gerard in this, and that the fact that the evil beings could, you know, the soldiers that died could be the Oni, and because of the fireflies, and it's just, it's ridiculous. It's a really, really good read. And if it has links to other things, it's fascinating.
It's amazing. It's
good.
Damn it, Jeff, making us think. How dare he?
I know. God.
I was looking up tattoo symbolism, sending them to Karen today, because I was like, wait a minute. Look at the Celtic knot. Wait a minute. This means, because the tattoo on Derek's back, I was like, oh, it could be meaning personal growth, human development, and spiritual expansion. I'm like, oh, we're up to that part. Yeah. Spiritual expansion. What?
Yeah, he's I think I'm overthinking this. I'm like, Robbie, that's why we're here. So,
but it could also mean, you know, illumination, hidden desire, and subconscious is spiritual. I mean, because it's just, I really hope we find out what his mom said to him. Please.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to get that scene if he was so, like, angsty at Peter and stuff. Like,
He's probably dead. We don't even know it. Like, Derek killed him, and he's just in a box somewhere.
Peter, oh yeah. I will say I did mildly, not laugh, but sort of horribly laugh when Derek told Scott, like, I had to take Cora back to South America because that's where she was. Who? Who raised this 11-year-old child, by the way? Like, I don't understand. But, you know, that's where she spent most of the time since the fire. With who? She was
the Amazon like, vampires from, like, Twilight. I'm just kidding.
Oh my god. And I need to know. But he was like, I also needed to speak to my mother about something. And Scott was sort of like, he was trying so hard to be careful in the way that he is lately, like, where he doesn't want to, like, tell. Like, he did the same with Lydia. He's kind of really cautiously, like, doesn't want to tell people they're wrong. But he was like, you're dead, mother? Like, do you want to explain that up a bit for me?
It would be great.
I want to be sensitive to you right now, but your mom's really dead, so.
But Derek didn't even, like, explain it. He was just like, yeah, and then he, like, kept talking. I'm like, really? You're just gonna leave it at that?
Maybe Alicia Coppola will reprise her role as Talia. You never know. I mean, we could tweet her. She likes us. Yeah. She's cool. I met her in real life. She's I will be back for that show anytime. She's like, she's a fellow Long Island girl, and she was here for a book signing, and she was very, very cool. And she's like, I want to be back. Please write to Jeff. And I'm like, I'll put in a good word next time he calls me. Yeah. but hopefully, you know, we'll get a little bit more of a flashback, unless it comes through the Black Wolf form and kind of mind melts with Derek, who knows, but we need to know what she said to him.
Well, I think we pretty much covered all of the other questions that were here, except for we didn't really touch on the fact that the Nogitsune and Styles kept saying us, and people are really confused and wondering who us is. And I took it as the Nogitsune is inside of Styles' head, so he's referring to himself, the Nogitsune, and Styles as an us. And that's why he was sort of like, we need to get us out of here because, you know, we're going to die if we don't get out of here because it's so cold. And so I kind of just assumed that it was sort of like telling Styles that he's possessed by the Nagitsune, and that we didn't know at the time, but that it's kind of everything's happening in his head. Is that how you guys interpreted it?
Yes. I mean, definitely.
Again, it's like, you know, using that rather than saying you, it's like it eliminates this idea of like that they're separate. Like it eliminates the idea that Styles is like, oh, you are a parasite, if you know what I mean. It makes him more believe that it is actually him. Whether that's true or not, whether it is actually, whether a Nagitsune develops from someone's own self or whether it is actually a parasite that possesses him, we don't know. Maybe it is actually something that comes out of himself, but I think the intention is to make him believe it's part of his own self.
It's very Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, you know what I mean? It's it's that inner struggle.
Yeah, we don't know whether it is literally that or whether he's trying to make him, or whether the Nagitsune is just trying to make Styles believe that, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is either a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or it's a parasite, and we don't know which option it is.
Mm-hmm.
I just need next week.
Do you think?
But no, I don't want next week. Oh my god, it looks traumatic.
It looks, no.
Oh god, okay.
Not with Chris holding a gun up against Derek's head. I was like, what's going on? Did you catch that? I was just like, no, what's going on? Stop it. Coach? I thought we were all friends.
And what's happening to Coach?
I almost died when I saw that. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah, that affected me quite a lot more than I thought it would.
I watched the trailer and I was kind of like, I don't know, man.
I stopped breathing, was crazy.
And the fact that it was an arrow, and it's like, now we have this whole, it's like, oh, who do we know who likes to shoot arrows?
Crazy girl.
Who likes to turn off her phone all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can we talk about happy things now?
Nah.
Yes, please.
There's no happiness left in the world. It's all sucked out. All right, go on. You go on.
Well, our non sequitur question comes from me this time, and I did purposely make it a happy one. And I also knew that this would be very relevant to all three of us. But what is your favorite Disney movie? And I have guesses for what I think you guys are going to say. So, Robbie, why don't you go first?
Oh, God. You see, here's the thing, though. If you're my friend on Facebook, so you definitely know. So that's
well,
not fair.
Well, you kind of do. That's the thing.
You have two options. But you do. You do. I do. Oh, God. Well, my favorite movie of all time that actually is a Disney movie is Beauty and the Beast. I have loved that movie forever. However, during the recent past months, after, you know, singing about it and doing everything that I can, Frozen is right behind it, like literally right behind it. So for various reasons, Beauty and the Beast, I love because Belle is one of my favorite characters because she has to save him in the end. And Frozen is awesome. Spoiler alert, in case nobody has seen it. Nobody needs a man. So, and it was all about family love. So, screw men. Those are my two. Sorry, that was a long.
I knew that, and I even got them in the right order.
Yay!
I actually have a beauty, like a from Disneyland, like literally within my reach on the corner of my desk. Last week's non sequitur question was like, what's the coolest thing in your near vicinity? And mine was my bow and arrow, which was on my desk. But I actually have lots of cool stuff on my desk, including a blown glass, bell jar version of like the rose with a few petals scattered off it. It's super nice. But yeah, I don't know if Beauty and the Beast is my favorite, but I really love this. So I want to know what you're going to guess for me, Karen. Go on.
No, you have to say it first.
No, you guess.
I would have to guess Tangled just because that's what I see you talk about most often, but I wasn't sure if that actually is your favorite one.
Yeah, it is my favorite of the modern ones. It is my favorite of the recent times. I think it's really beautifully done, the imagery, and I like that Alan Menken did the songs. of the older ones, I don't know, I have a few in terms of, like, I used to really like all of the really old ones, like, of the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. My favourite of the kind of very early ones is Sleeping Beauty. Prince Philip from Sleeping Beauty is my favourite.
Oh my god.
It's my favourite prince. I have a plushie Prince Philip and a small model Prince Philip. The small model is on my desk of plushies in my living room.
I'll tell you a story after you're done, by the way.
He's my favourite of the princes. I like Aladdin. I don't know, but I also liked all the animal ones, like 101 Dalmatians and stuff like that, like as a kid. Of the Renaissance, probably Aladdin or Hunchback. I don't like The Little Mermaid. I really don't, and a lot of people really love it, but I really don't like The Little Mermaid. But yeah, I would say Aladdin and Tangled. Oh, and Robin Hood. Robin Hood was my favorite as a kid. Like the fox Robin Hood was far and away my favorite as a child. So yeah. Karen, nice. What are yours?
I'm sure you know what my favorite one is. Come on.
Is it Alice?
No.
What? I don't know. I don't know everything.
I don't know either. I don't know everything either.
My favorite one is Hercules.
Oh, yeah. No, I like Hercules, too.
So do I.
Yeah. I didn't know that was your far and away favorite.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's so bad in terms of the mythology. It is terrible. Yes. It butchers it. But I love the movie so much. I love Hades. He's amazing. I love Megara. She's amazing. And the songs are wonderful.
Such a good Broadway show. The Muses is like a soul choir. Like it would make a Broadway show. I don't know why they haven't done it.
I mean, and most of the people, most of the women who did the voices of the Muses were either Tony Award winners or they were on Broadway. And I mean, so many people. You're not the only one who. Mm. I think everything should be made into a Broadway musical.
I mean,
the fact that they're apparently making Frozen into a Broadway musical, not anytime soon, but I'm like, how are they going to do this? But
I'm kind of like, how are they going to do that? My big other one that I want as a musical is Nightmare Before Christmas. I think that would be an incredible, like, live musical, like, in terms of, like, costuming and stuff. But yeah, Hercules would be amazing.
Would be amazing. I know some people from Broadway that should be playing him, but going back, by the way,
yes, what were you gonna say
about Prince Philip? I went to Disney back in December, and we went to they have Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party, and it's like during the few times of the year that the princes actually join the princesses. And I finally met Prince Philip and cried a little bit. And I am not ashamed. He was hot. He was very, very hot. That's all I'm saying.
Amazing.
It was amazing.
And I really love Prince Philip because, like, I like that, like, a lot of the Disney stuff is, like, you know, the more modern stuff is, you know, more about the girls and what they do with themselves. You know, And I'm not super into, like, the traditional love story, but I like that he was, like, met this girl in the woods and is like, screw you, daddy, I am not going to have my arranged marriage. Conveniently, it turns out to be the same person. But I liked him as a character for that time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, on Once Upon a Time, he's, you know, an interesting character, too. And, of course, like, I mean, that show kind of twists everything around in a good way.
I think that it gives people, I haven't seen all of Once Upon a Time, but I think it gives people like a different attachment. Like they go and watch the original with a different attachment to those characters, if you know what I mean. In the same way that musicals like Wicked, which I now know that the Wicked Witch of the West is also going to be on Once Upon a Time, and I don't know if it's like the Wicked version or the actual Wizard of Oz version, like whether she's meant to be evil or like the sympathetic Elphaba, like I don't know which one it is, but I think it gives people like a different. Oh, and Mulan.
And Maleficent.
Well, I was gonna say. Mulan, yes. I was like, no, Mulan is 100% my. Can I redo? Yeah, Tangled, Mulan, Fox, Robin Hood. That's my favorites. Right. And then kind of Aladdin and Hunchback of Notre Dame, but yeah.
Notice I asked, what is your favorite Disney movie? And they were all like, here are my top six.
Sorry.
By the way, if you're asking me, yeah, Hercules, Tangled, Pocahontas, Mulan.
Okay. I don't know why I forgot Mulan, but last time I watched Mulan, I like cried all the way through, and I didn't cry in it when I first saw it, but I watched it like late last year and I like cried all the way through. Tangled, Mulan, Fox, Robin Hood, Aladdin, Hunchback.
Mine's definitely Beauty and the Beast, Frozen, Sleeping Beauty from the classic is definitely up there that I cannot wait for Maleficent to come out. For various reasons, and I love The Little Mermaid is up there too, simply for the fact, not so much Little Mermaid, it's just that Ursula is my favorite Disney character.
Oh no, she's cool. I'm just sort of not here for people that stan Prince Eric because I think he's super boring, and everyone I know loves him.
Oh god,
him.
No, he's
everyone
he
I know
so
loves
boring.
Him, and I find him really boring. And sorry if you love Prince Eric, and I've had all these people be like, but he likes this and this. He has like two lines, and he's super boring and like deluded. And I don't know, and I find Kiss the Girl like slightly rapey, but. I don't know.
Is this a Teen Wolf podcast? What?
What? We're talking about... It all comes secular. Back.
I know.
Anyway.
It doesn't...
Sorry.
It's your fault, Karen.
Sorry to Little Mermaid fans. I'm not a fan, but oh well. We'll live.
No. That's totally understandable.
But yes, sorry about that.
Sorry.
Hercules is my number one for Broadway, though. Yes. I really wanted the Aladdin, and now Aladdin's in... Oh! But I will actually say my favorite animated movie of my childhood is not a Disney movie, though.
Uh-oh, what is it?
Karen, come on, you have to know this.
What?
My favorite animated movie.
I don't feel guilty about not knowing it because you didn't know I loved Hercules, so.
Oh, well, it's Anastasia. That's 100% my favorite. Of that ilk, if you know what I mean. It's not
Which true. I'm glad that you actually said that because I'm so sick of people putting up like, oh, Disney princess art, and it's like, and Anastasia. I'm like, no, Anastasia was not part of it.
The first time I knew that Darren Criss was like my spiritual soulmate was where a really old interview with him, like way pre-Glee, and someone was like, oh, you know, what's your favorite Disney song, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, you know, I think it was on Twitter, actually. He was like, someone was like, oh, Disney, you know, have you ever done... at the beginning from Anastasia, and he was like, I love that song, but it's not Disney, it's Fox. And I was like, thank you, my pal. And I've never looked back, but
it's understandable.
I love it, and that again would I need on Broadway, and they were workshopping it, and I don't know if it's gonna happen, but I love it so much, so it's my number one, even though it's not Disney, but it's my of that idea of film style, it's my favorite.
The animated movie. That's okay. The musical animated movies. And by the way, whenever I hear the Richard Marx Donna Lewis version, I still tear up a little bit. I do have to say.
Yeah.
Oh, such a good song.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, Karen.
No, it's
Karen, no, that was I knew this was gonna happen. That's why I asked it. I knew that it would be a big hit for the question. So
and at least I didn't start singing Let It Go, so you're very lucky.
Karen, we should watch Hercules at BiteCon. Maybe not at BiteCon, maybe in the room, or if we hang out in New York prior to that or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Watch Hercules. Okay.
Okay.
I was going to say, everyone's invited to watch Hercules with us at BiteCon. You're probably actually not, because we probably can't fit all of BiteCon into our hotel room. But
yeah. Bad.
And I don't know if the con would be like, yeah, let's screen Hercules at the Teen Wolf con, but...
There was a werewolf in there, wasn't there? No, I don't
That's
know.
That's what we'll be doing. We will be, when we're not hanging out with you people, we will be watching. Okay. And probably Star Kid musicals and all the other things that we talked
yes.
about.
Yes.
Cool. All right. We should stop this silliness. But at least it's some light relief after that horrible...
We needed it.
...terrible episode of Teen Wolf that we just watched. Like, I can't carry on like this. This can't continue at this kind of level, emotional level. Like,
yeah.
And I've, like, it will just... be overkill and it will be too much and I won't be able to deal. Like, so I think that it needs to not happen.
Yes. We need, again, we need a musical episode, yeah, or animated an episode fiction. An episode with a laugh track, something.
Oh my God, can you imagine? Oh God.
That would be amazing. I'm going to write to Jeff right now.
Oh God, that would be so bad. But yeah, I need some, you know, apparently, you know, our favorite comic relief coach is going to get shot with an arrow. So that's chill, whatever, not a problem. So yeah, next week's episode is called Lotharia Vulpina, which I believe is that moss stuff, is it not, Karen? Like that they...
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if they've even mentioned it on the show yet, but I think when they... The episode titles came out, people looked up and found out some stuff about it, and it's this forest lichen of some sort that has some powers, I guess.
Yeah, and they basically call it, like, wolf moss or something like that, but Vulpina is actually related to fox,
yeah.
So that's going to be really interesting to see how it plays a part.
Yeah. And, I mean, the basic synopsis just says Scott and the others try to prevent a disaster. Lydia and Allison seek out an unlikely teacher. Do we know who that unlikely teacher is?
Harris.
Harris is dead!
He's dead. Thank God.
Karen loves him. Karen wants him back.
I miss Harris.
Although, wait, isn't Lydia's mom a teacher now, too?
Yeah. Unlikely teacher in what? Like, in, like...
Yeah,
in Banshee studies.
Cool. They need Derek's educational videos, obviously.
Oh my God. Yes, that should be an whole entire episode too.
Yeah, his educational.
What if
educational...
it's Peter?
Oh, no.
What if they go to Peter to like ask for
help,
information?
Be like, so you know that time you bit me? What happened? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh God, please.
We know he's gonna be in next week's episode.
Nah, none of that. All right, I'm done. I'm done with this. I'm done with Tina. I might not come back next week.
It's just going to be me next week, you guys.
Yeah.
I'll be here. I'll help if you need it.
Yeah, Robin.
You're talking about Disney.
I'm just going to quit and start Disney podcast.
No.
All right, we'll go now because this episode is super long. And while apparently some of you enjoy that, I have to edit it. So, yeah. All right. So we'll say bye and thank you very much to Robbie, who, if you don't
thank
follow
you.
Already, you should be able to reach on his Wonder Robbie handles, which will be linked in the podcast post. And thank you to everyone who contributed beautiful theories and meta and thought about things very hard in terms of this show. And hopefully we're not all just wasting our energy and setting ourselves up for some sort of gigantic, disastrous pain. Yes. What are the chances, Karen?
Most likely.
Why are you asking me?
I'm just looking at my picture of Styles and Derek listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast with the sticker on their Mac in Styles' dorm room, and it makes me happy.
Oh, Styles.
Oh, that makes me happy too.
Yeah.
It makes me really sad.
Why? Because he might never go to college? Because he might be dead?
Wow.
Well, I didn't think of that, but now that you say it. Okay, we need to
go
now.
Thank you both. Thank you very much.
Thank you
everyone for listening.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll see you all soon, I guess. And yeah, everyone have a safe and healthy week until next episode. I suggest not watching this episode again if you want to stay safe and healthy and happy. So, yeah, we're going to go now. So, farewell.
Bye, everyone.
Ta-ta.
Bye.
Roses in the wind, fish from falling in, I always know you're there, Lord, I am a chef with you.
This. Yeah, we need to just expel it now.
I don't want to.
We could do it.
No, Jesus. All right. Okay. We're gonna start now. It's gonna be okay. We're gonna get through it. Right. Okay. God damn it.